please pray for the bereaved family right now in this county. Do we love so well? Thank you for what you're going to do. We bless your holy name. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pray for this to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome everyone to our workshop. As most of you already know, we will not be voting on anything tonight. We don't vote at workshops, but we listen and we talk, and anything that needs to be voted on can be put on the next agenda. So we will start out with item number 3, the board to discuss the ad valorem tax incentive ordinance.
Good evening. Ray Curzon, the attorney for the Taylor County Development Authority, the TCDA. The TCDA serves as your pre-screening agency for ad valorem tax incentive exemption applications. I was actually scheduled to appear before you roughly a month ago, but I also had to appear at the same time at a school board expansion hearing. So I did drop off with you guys then a packet that I prepared for you so that you could review it in advance. And that way I wasn't coming to you with a lot of fresh information or things you had not seen before. And so I can kind of present to you what I found in dealing with this ordinance, and then field questions or kind of however you would like to proceed.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, there's a state statute that authorizes counties to enact an ad valorem tax exemption ordinance for economic development or industrial development. And that statute lays forth the process for you to enact it. You've done that, and now the voters have reauthorize you to reenact or continue with the same one that you have. The statute then lays out a process for application, eligibility, etc. So that is also laid out in the 4 statutes. The county, when it enacted the ad valorem tax exemption ordinance, the last time that it enacted it, it may have enacted it in conformity with what the statute was at the time. There are some differences between the current Florida statute and the existing county ordinance. And so I thought it might be useful to highlight some of those differences. As I understand it, part of the workshop tonight is to look at whether or not you want to amend or tweak your ordinance or something like that. So one of the If you have the packet that I prepared for you last time, I'm starting on page 12 of that packet, which is kind of a form application I put together for applicants. And here's one of the things that the...
Excuse me, I'm sorry. This is not the same packet that Mr. Curtis gave you before. We've just tried to reproduce as much information as we can for you, so they won't have the same page. So what they have is the codified ordinance, the ordinance, and the state statute.
All right. I think at some point I dropped off some spiral bound materials. Okay. Making sure my memory wasn't failing me that badly today. So one of the issues is what is an application? You know, it talks about an applicant and applying. And kind of the status quo had been to submit this form that the Department of Revenue, the State Department of Revenue, promulgates down to the Property Appraiser's Office called the DR-418. It's a 1 or 2 page form that the applicant then lists a few details, and then that gets submitted to the Property Appraiser's Office. And both the statute and the ordinance say the property appraiser then needs to report back to you before you make a decision and let you know how much the proposed added investment, whether it's handling personal property like machinery or whether it's construction, which would be real property, how much added taxable ad valorem tax revenue would be generated, how much would be is being requested to be exempted and for what period of time. And so that kind of had been the nature of the application in the past. It doesn't, it leaves a lot to be desired though, because it doesn't tell you much when an applicant arrives and you've got one page with very few details that tells you just a little bit about the project. Your county ordinance does set forth a lot of other requirements for an applicant, you know, or put a lot of requirements on the TCDA. It requires when the application comes in, or the state statute says the application goes to the county, that the county ordinance says goes to the county, the county's designee, the TCDA. It says within a certain amount of time of receiving the application, the director of the TCDA will review the application for completion, review the application to determine its eligibility under the state statute and the code, and then we'll do an economic analysis and prepare that and report it to the TCDA board. And then go to the TCDA board, present those findings to the board will ask whatever questions they want, and then they make a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners as to what your ordinance, not the statute, but what the ordinance says is that the TCDA board will submit a finding to or report to the Board of County Commissions and recommend approval or denial. And then if approval, what conditions will be placed on that? It doesn't give a lot of specificity on that, but some that might come to mind are, if they're requesting 100% exemption for 10 years, the TCDA board might recommend 75% exemption for 5 years. One of the difficulties with TCDA board is there are no guidelines on why they should recommend one thing or the other. It doesn't tell them the county is looking at this, so if this is going to be a bigger job creator, you know, then you might recommend more generous approval, or if the project is this big, we're generating $1 million of tax revenue, don't be as generous in your recommendation, because you know, if you give a $500,000 discount, you're still getting $500,000 in revenue to the county. And so the TCDA board is a little bit lost on why they should recommend an up or down vote or what limitations should be placed upon that, quite frankly, because they don't know what guidance, there's no guidance in the ordinance as to why they should recommend one thing or the other. So that's a little bit of a difficulty as to, in their process, in their deliberative process.
I can interrupt you.
Yes, sir.
If it came to us, we'd have the same difficulty.
Right.
In determining, because you say there's no guidelines.
Except the statutory guideline and the ordinance guideline is the county commission has the ultimate sole discretion to approve or deny. So it can pretty much be whatever reason you want, so long as you find that it's eligible under the statute and under the code section, so long as it's eligible, you have it. You really don't have to state a reason, just, hey, I think it's eligible, I want to approve it, this is the amount I want to approve it. So, you might feel as lost as we do, but you get to be the ones to make the decision. The TCDA board is over here going, well, we want to make a recommendation, but quite frankly, we all want to send something to the county commission, and they go, what are those guys thinking? Well, we don't have any guidelines as to why you might think something is important or how we should weigh it. So there's a difficulty there for that. Another difficulty is another divergence in the state statute and the county ordinance. Is that the state statute requires that the applicant apply in the year that they are wanting the exemption. The county code says for the applicant to apply before March 1 in the year that they want the application, or that they want the exemption. So that distinction, and my report to the TCDA board, where I kind of wrote them up a summary or memo, I told them, you know, if somebody applied after March 1 and wants the exemption in that year, you still have to process the application and send it through, but whether or not you can even recommend to the county commission that this is an eligible application becomes a little bit of a tricky deal, because if we say, yes, it's eligible under statute, and then we say, but not under your code, or we say it's eligible under your code but not under state statutes, we recommend you approve it, the TCDA board is a little bit hesitant when there is a clash or disagreement between the statutory code and the county code as to what findings to make to you. Another difficulty with the eligibility statute is the county code says that it will, the, another requirement for eligibility is that the property can't have been added to the tax road prior to the county's passage of the ordinance. Now, the ordinance that it's referring to, when an application comes to you, you then have to pass an ordinance specific to that company and that application saying we are granting it, and that then goes into your code of ordinances. So if a company applies before March 1 in the year they want the exemption, but then it has to go through this TCDA process, and then it matriculates along, and then you need some more information from the applicant that makes it to you in October. In the meantime, the property has been added to the tax rolls. Under your ordinance, it would seem to read that they lost their eligibility just because of the delay in the process. And you're going to have one coming to you shortly, where that's kind of laid out in the recommendation. In all likelihood, we haven't had a meeting on it yet, but my guess is the TCA board is going to recommend to you that they can't really make a recommendation. And that because we can't even determine if it's eligible under your code because it was added to the tax rolls in this interim period. And yes.
Just this question, Ray. Do you know who sent the Board of County Commissioners a proposal with regard to passing the ordinance that they passed back in 2008 and 2009?
I don't.
TCDA.
Okay.
I just want you to...
I'm imperfect almost daily. They may have been imperfect then, or maybe it tracked exactly with the statute at that time. I don't really know, and I'm not here to castigate anyone.
We're not castigating. I'm just telling you, I'm just for my client's benefit, just to realize that, you know, again, nothing is perfect, and we can always improve things, but where this thing came from was, the impetus of it was from the TCDA.
Sure.
I specifically remember that. I didn't mean to interrupt, but my client needed to know about that.
Another issue that we have is, and you'll see this one coming to you in an application that's come recently, is an issue where a person or a company sent a letter to the director and says, I'd like to apply for an exemption for my company. We're doing this, this, and this. And then the TCA director turned around and said, hey, here's the form application that we put together. You fill this out. In between the time he sent the first letter and the time that he filled out the application we put together, the county, the property was added to the tax rolls. So does the initial request count as the application, since the neither the statute nor the ordinance define what an application is? Does the request by the applicant constitute their application, or does that come later with something that we've created, or is it the DR 418 that the former Department of Revenue promulgates? So you'll see that coming to you as well, where we're putting in our recommendation. We don't know. It kind of depends on what you determine. If you determine that the initial request, which was prior to the adding to the tax rolls, is going to be in the application, that's fine. Of course, it's added to the tax rolls well before you're going to get to the point of passing the ordinance and that approves or denies it. And of course, under your existing ad valorem tax exemption ordinance, it says can't be on the tax roll before you pass the, consider the ordinance to grant or deny. So that's kind of a sticky wicket that if you're going to look at trying to tweak your ordinance, you may want to look into. Another one that the DCDA has gotten a fair amount of, at least I've been advised, a fair amount of negative chatter about, is recommending approval of retroactive applications. And so in your ordinance, there is no prohibition against granting an exemption retroactively. There's only a determination of eligibility. Is it applied for in the year that they want the exemption, and has it been added to the tax rolls? So, for instance, in one that came before you before where you actually approved it, the project was completed, then the application came, and it came before you sometime around the time it was added to the tax rolls. And so there were a lot of people who said, well, that's not what it was intended for. And a lot of people got really up in arms about that. Of course, my board came to me and said, did you let us make a poor recommendation actually, before we even got to the point of making a recommendation, I did the research on it, and I provided my board with two Attorney General opinions, the first one in 1981, and the second one was 8 or 9 years later, where they took up this very issue, and then they issued an opinion that said, this is approved, and it is in the discretion of the county commission, you can't approve them retroactively. And of course, there was a lot of back and forth against, well, why would you ever want to approve one retroactively? And some of the things that were going on is a company may come to you and say, look, if we can get the funding, we've got a window to get the funding. If we can get, if we think we can get this break, they'll go ahead and get this funding, and we start building. Meanwhile, the process might take a while, but we're already underway. And people might fuss and say, well, that's a retroactive application because you were already underway. You're going to do this anyway. But occasionally, a company may need the prospect of the exemption to go ahead and obtain funding and start a project. They may have a short window. So that's one reason. I'm not advocating for or against it, but if you're looking for a reason why the Attorney General's office, well, the reason that they didn't say that it was prohibited is because it's not statutorily prohibited. If you're looking for a policy reason as to why, in certain circumstances, that might be a good idea. There may just be that company that comes to you and says, we've got a small window to move here. If we can move on quickly, we'll have to come to you for the application after the fact, but generally speaking, you know, do you think we'd be eligible, et cetera. But that's something that I know that there's been a lot of negative feedback on, and so it may be something that you want to address in your ordinance, or you may not. Let's see, another issue is that the TCDA under the existing ordinance is not tasked with vetting the facts that the applicant submits. So imagine we have an application that comes forward, where the person says, this project that I'm embarking on or begun embarking on or I've already completed is going to generate 50 jobs, and that seems pretty darn unlikely. The TCDA, even though you have a pre-screening agent designee, isn't tasked with going out there and investigating the facts on the ground and trying to determine if they were truthful or if the applicant was just trying to stretch it so that he could make an endorse and try to get a better out of that. And so there's no process for that. On top of that, that would probably be a pretty time-consuming thing. And if you were going to vet the facts of one applicant, you might want to be vetting the facts of every applicant so that you weren't inequitably shining a light on one and not the other. I don't know. That's probably something in your policy wheelhouse. But that is something else that the TCDA board has raised and says, I have real concerns about this application. I'm not so sure about this. And my advice to them is, first of all, you're an all-volunteer board, and you all have jobs to go to. Where are we going to find the time to investigate these things? Of course, we have a director that we can take him and have him be investigating these applications and the facts. That certainly is an option, potentially. But more importantly, the county commission did not task us with that, and we don't want to steer outside of our lane either and have something blow up. And the county commission gets negative feedback that the TCDA is out here beating the bushes and calling me a liar. Right? So unless the TCDA is directed by you to go out and vet something where we might be put in a position of saying the applicant said this, but we found the following, unless we're directed to do that, that has not been where we're wanting to go. But there are concerns about some applications that have been submitted. By the way, with increased development comes increases in these applications, so you've got quite a few in the hopper right now that are coming your way after we do our pre-screening process.
Excuse me.
Yes.
I'm just, as you're talking about this, I'm just wondering what was the mindset from the beginning when TCDA came up with this idea and presented it. I mean, everybody not think about all these things that you're discussing that now are appearing, and well, we don't have time for volunteers, so obviously then it's going to be thrown in our laps.
I do not know. I was not the TCDA's attorney at the time. I was a lowly public defender of the county back then, so I can't can't weigh in on that, and we don't have the institutional knowledge. Scott Preter, to my knowledge, was not the director at that time. So that's, I think, not, that's correct. And I certainly know that none of the existing board were, as far as I know, were board members at the time. So we just, I don't have the institutional knowledge. Hoping that it might be something that Rick Greer might have. I have not reached out to him to pose that question.
Thank you.
And so then the last thing is that the TCDA ultimately would like to not be in this and playing the role of the pre-screening agency if you determine that that would be an appropriate step to our appropriate modification of the ordinance. It is on a lot of these issues. The board and the director are kicking it to me to work on them because, quite frankly, some of these get down to the legalese, and the Scott doesn't want to say, I recommend to my board, the EOCC, that this is eligible, and it comes up here, and the board goes, how is this eligible? This doesn't mean this or this doesn't mean that. You know, Mr. Frederick is competent in various things, but he certainly isn't going to be as confident as myself or Mr. Bishop, certainly, and parsing out statutory language, its interplay with your ordinance, and then interplaying that with the facts, especially where there's a divergence between the two. And then certainly, you know, having a research attorney general opinions to back up support and eligibility recommendations for something that's a retroactive application, that's not going to be his strong suit. And so it ends up getting put to me to try to fulfill the job that's been passed to the TCDA, and unfortunately that, you know, is expensive for the TCDA's relatively big budget. And so the TCDA is certainly hopeful that the county and revamping or modifying this ordinance would take that responsibility off of the TCDA. But, you know, that's totally within your
discussion. What I'm getting from this is the first thing we need to do is we need to ask Mr. Bishop or whomever, some legal expert, to change the ordinance. The ordinance needs to be changed because it's in conflict with the state statutes. Am I correct in that? We need to tweak our ordinance.
Well, there are some conflicts between ordinance and state statute that are absolutely permissible. The legislature has this doctrine called preemption where certain things, when they decide it, counties or municipalities can step in that area. So, for instance, regulation on alcohol. I think we are all very familiar. The state regulates that, and you don't really get to regulate it or unless they otherwise say counties can control this or the other, right?
Gun control,
that's big. Okay, so we're all familiar with that concept of preemption. But then there are other areas. For instance, the state statute says that a sexual offender can't live within 1,000 feet of a place where children normally congregate. Your county ordinance is 2,500. And that is a permissible deviation between state and county. And so I'm not saying, telling you that the divergence between these two is actually in violation of the law. I have not come across any law where, and by law I mean case law or decision or attorney general opinion, where some court or the attorney general analyzed a situation where an acting ordinance for a TC development authority diverged from the state statute and they said, yes, this is a preemption, no, you cannot do that.
Well, if we're not in conflict with the state statute, with our ordinance, then the ordinance still needs to be tweaked. I guess that's a good word.
I think I would definitely agree with that.
You would agree with that?
Yes, sir.
All right, now the question is, so we're going to have to rely on somebody, either you or Mr. Bishop or some other attorney, to present us some document that would cure all the issues that we have about TCDA or whatever, who's ever going to be the elder.
Yes, sir.
What the application looks like, when is the application effective? Is it March the 1st or is it some other day? And then I can look that over and compare it to what I've heard you say, as I understood it. But to write this thing, I don't have that that expertise.
I definitely think it's going to fall to the lawyers. I think probably what the lawyers would right. want your guidance on are policy changes. So, for instance, do you still want the TCA to serve in a pre-screening role, or do you want them to serve in a modified variant of that role, or not at all? If we kind of have that kind of direction, we got a little better idea where to go.
Well, instead of reinventing the wheel, why don't we look at some other communities? Does that mean that we have to do what other communities do, but at least as a starting point to just, what is this county doing, this county?
They need to be a starting point because they're the ones that's going to be up front with somebody coming in to build something. They're going to be the ones that see them and talk to them first.
About the TCDA.
Right, TCDA. They're going to be, you know, recommend. They're going to talk to the people first when they first come to pay the county.
But they got to have something from us to tell them.
Yeah, we need to get the ordinance straight where they'll know what they're going to talk to them.
Yes, our attorney wants to tell them.
Well, if y'all recall, on March the 19th of 2018, I sent a letter to LaWanda. And there's a copy of that in your packet, and it explains the, in my humble opinion, what you have to do and the requirements of it. I tried to make it as simplistic as I could, so that it would be easily understood. I was reviewing it as Ray was speaking, and I think we all need to review it again. And I also attached a copy of not only the ordinance, but 2009-08, but I also attached a copy of the statute 196. I think I did that.
Yes, sir.
As a practical matter. Nothing's perfect. And so if it needs to be, for lack of a better term, amended, I like that term better than tweaking, then of course we can do that. But the purpose of this was to explain to LaWanda and Ted that, you know, this was a 10-year thing, and then it had to be renewed for a subsequent 10 years, approved by a referendum. And I think that wasn't that also put on the ballot, and it was approved, so we can go ahead and amend our ordinance to how we see fit. But it provides that, let me just go through it just a little bit. It says, when a person, firm, or corporation desires to get the benefit of this, the application must include the following: the names and location of the new business or the expense of an existing business, description of the improvements to the real property, description of the tangible personal property, you know, the difference between real and personal property, proof to the satisfaction of the Board of County Commissioners that the applicant is a new business or an expansion of an existing business as defined by Section 196, 0.012.15, which states and it explains those things. And also, the number of jobs the applicant expects to create along with the average wage of the jobs and whether the jobs, the expected time and schedule for the job creation, other information deemed necessary or appropriate by the county. And then before the county takes action on the application, the board shall deliver a copy to the property appraiser of the county. Then the property appraiser shall report to the board the total revenue from the ad valorem tax sources, or an estimate of such ever. Any revenue lost to the county as a result of this, an estimate of the revenue that would be lost during the current fiscal year. That may be why the March 1st date was entered in that way. The determination is whether the property for which an exemption is requested is to be incorporated into the new business. So, and then in consideration of it, then it has those lists from A to G, which you're supposed to do. And then an ordinance granting an exemption under this section shall be adopted in the same manner of ordinances that you do when you pass other ordinances. So it really, again, if we're going to get some applications for these exemptions, it's important that we not only know what the state statute states, but also what the ordinance states. And again, like I think it was pretty succinctly put by Ray, who's going to do the research to determine, in fact, whether you want to consider the application and grant the exemption. One other issue with regard to the retroactive, it was just, more than anything, it was a mistake, and we went back and redid it, if y'all recall, to give a citizen the advantage of the exemption. That's what happened with regard to that. I think that was pointed out to us by Ray, which I appreciated on that. So, like I said before, I don't know that I've ever drafted a perfect piece of paper in my life. So there's always room for improvement. And one of the good things about that I've told y'all before, and I think that my learned colleague from Jefferson Street will agree with me, is that there's no such thing as plagiarism in the law. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
With regard to making copies and following what other people have done. Do you have any idea of how many request applications are coming down the pipe?
I think we have three that are matriculating through now with the number of another coming.
Okay.
And that's all come in the last 60 days, from my recollection. How would it
are they new or are they new businesses or do you know?
Well, the definition of new business or expanding business is set forth in both the statute and the ordinance, and so it appears that all of them qualify under the definition set forth there, but oftentimes those definitions and what people might think of as a new business, those diverge. So I want to clarify that. In my opinion, statutorily, yes, and pursuant to the county ordinance.
Okay.
And I would mention the factors that Mr. Bishop was reading off. About six or seven of those are both statutory and they were copied into the ordinance, but then the ordinance has some additional factors. And the DR 418, which is the single page form that has been promulgated by the state DOR related to these, and that gets filled out by the applicant, then by Bruce, has all those statutory questions, how many jobs does it create, or number of full-time jobs, the type of property, et cetera. And then Bruce fills out, property appraiser fills out the bottom part and says, here's how much ad valorem you would expect, here's how much would be discounted. Your ordinance will ask additional questions than the one on the state form, which is why we try to create a separate application that didn't just ask those, but ask all the ones that you had in the county code as well. But, I believe Mr. Demps pointed out, I believe it was you, that identifying what an application is going to constitute would be a really good thing, because if they're getting the one that's always been accepted as the application, a single page from tax form, they're not answering some of the questions that you put in your ordinance that you want to answer to.
Well, just, as an idea, since there are so many things that could cause delays, as you explained, getting the application in and going through the process, and then they end up being on the tax rolls anyway, and that seems like...
Make it retroactive to the day of application, as opposed to...
Well, I mean, that's one idea. And then another idea would be, what if we gave them a wait a year, and then at the end of the first year, they've got, we know how many employees they have, we know what they're doing, and then grant the exemption then. What do you think about that?
It's a great question. When I tell somebody it's a great question, I don't know the answer to it.
May I try to explain that?
Sure.
So the state statute says, and your ordinance tracks similarly in this regard, the application must be made in the year that they want the exemption. So if they complete the project, they just staffed with some people that came before you and applied, you would essentially be saying, it's our policy to reject your application at this time, but if you apply for an exemption next year, because you can apply in the year you want the exemption, you give it a year so we see your track record, and you apply next year. The counter to that is both the statute and your ordinance allow you to revoke one. So you can grant it. You can say, I'm giving this to you for 10 years, but you can do an annual review. In fact, it calls for an annual review.
It does,
yeah. Upon request, all that has to happen is someone, I don't think it does mean to, but someone from the county, or TCA.net, but someone from the county would say, Mr. Applicant, you represented, you were going to create 60 jobs, and we're requesting our annual review provide X, Y, and Z. And if they didn't do it, you can then hold a meeting and modify or revoke the exemption. So you've had that power already.
Right. And this seems like it's sort of under what we call home rule, where counties, in some cases, can make their own rules. So we could change our ordinance to say what we want it to say.
Yes.
It seems that way.
I mean, that's what we're talking about anyway.
Yes.
But, ma'am?
Sure.
But when we do that, we need to have an attorney present to be sure that we're not opening ourselves up for anything we've done. You know, I can understand helping and doing what's best. I'm not sharp enough to go interview this stuff and say, this is what we need to do. And when the board is written, to say, this is right and this is what we want.
But that's what our attorney is for. Is exactly to keep us straight, and I'm Jill.
Hear
from somebody else.
And certainly if the policy directives were kind of, and they can't vote on anything or take anything out, but if Mr. Bishop and I kind of got the sense on this particular item that the board was kind of feeling like this might be a good way to look, it might give us, Mr. Bishop, the ability to start drafting, maybe even just a set of bullet points to present to you for the next meeting. Here's my takeaway from the workshop of these bullet points you want us to start fleshing out with tags.
We have to have a referendum first.
The referendum is passed.
All right.
Yes, sir.
All right, I'll just read your language. First thing to do is...
Yeah, but that was in March of 2018. Malcolm, and that's... The question was, you know, we got all worried about it because the 10 years was up.
Okay.
And so we scrambled and got, if you look at the bottom of the letter on the first page, I think it says, telling them that we had, telling LaWanda, subparagraph 2, for against the granting of the exemption, and it passed, Malcolm, on the first page of my letter, dated March the 19th of 2018. We got it on the ballot and it passed.
Statutory 10-year sunset, which you also incorporated into your ordinance, so that, you know, it was going to sunset twofold unless it was put back up and right passed.
So here's a suggestion, and I listened to Ray. I don't remember every point that he made. Well, if y'all would just say Ray and I to get together and look at the ordinance and look at the statute together, and then bring y'all with a recommendation, if in fact we can agree, or give you maybe You can amend it this way, or you can amend it this way, or you can amend it that way, in the form of a, hopefully, letter that's easily understood to y'all.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
That works for me.
One thing that I'm really concerned about, though, is who, just like Mr. Curtis said, who is going to validate the application? And I think about, and I think about our staff, and I can't think of one single person that I would say, you'll want to get this person to do that, because I can see where this could take quite a bit of time, mm-hmm. and you've got three or four coming in quickly. I mean, this is a concern.
Exactly.
And, you know, do we have to hire more staff to do this? And then we also, when we grant these, give enough revenue then, so that's a huge concern. But they're tired. They don't have time to do it, and they don't have the money to pay Mr. Curtis, so we're kind of in the same place.
Well,
an option that you were kind of alluding to it earlier on the delay side, maybe that perhaps you set up, this is an annual review that's going to be mandatory no matter what. We don't need to ask you for it. You deliver it 12 months after granting, and it's going to have the following things: copies of your list of employees with proof of employment, say of you know, W-9 or something like that, redacted, albeit something that they've got to produce that's stating kind of say, here's our packet. Your staff doesn't have to go out in the field, but you just look and go, all right, on their application, they said they were going to deliver 27 jobs. They have 13.
Give the money back?
Well, I don't think it works like that.
I know.
You cancel, then you nice can take it up and say, we're ready to terminate the exemption.
Well, that's well and good, but just for instance, if we had an application to come in, and it's the end of, say it's in February, and then somebody has got to stop what they're doing to get this done.
Maybe has some time.
And in your current ordinance.
So did you do that over there? I think Jim alluded to that. This thing needs to go to TCDA first. Not me.
And you have time frames in your existing ordinance. I think Scott Frederick, within 10 days of receiving the application, has to begin work on it. Within 30 days, has to submit it to his board.
Right.
And so he, as you're saying, kind of got to stop what you're doing if you want to make your time frames and get down to it really quickly.
Yeah, I'm not interested in us doing that.
Okay.
Because I just don't think we have staff and time to do it.
Yeah, you mean us as a council
member? Not our staff.
We don't, there's not that many of us to do all of this.
I do not want to burden our already burdened staff to do this. I think that the TCDA director maybe would be the one to do it.
He doesn't have time. He's not even here.
But he needs to make time for
us. Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
I serve on TCDA board of regulators, and it's a cumbersome. We've got one business entity that's getting that exemption now. Okay, he got it after the fact. He got it before March 1, before Bruce put it on the tax bill. If I was doing it, they need to come and apply before they did anything. They need to apply, say what they're going to do. And then that ordinance now, they're supposed to tell you each year how many jobs you got, if that ordinance, right? They're supposed to give a report how they're complying. I don't know who would be the oversight on that, but the property appraiser keeps up with getting ag exemption, homestead exemption, all that. So if it's not changed, I'm going to sign off the board pretty good. I already told you all that. It's so cumbersome. Can't take more than two lawyers to keep it straight. But if you just took, come apply before you do it. And I'm going to provide this many jobs. This follow-through, that cleans that part of it.
And we get the monitor all down there each year.
He doesn't validate it, then when you do it. Yeah. What's that about?
I say, and then once the person comes in before they start the project, makes their application.
But
I hire 10 people,
But then not be done, then that, at least once a year, somebody's got to verify.
They're not going to tell you that they've done, that's their job to do it. And if they don't do it, the.
Somebody's got to check, see.
Yeah, that's simple, but when you start doing a retroactive, how far retroactive do you go?
Well, I agree with you,
what all the effort I knew, that I do know that this retroactivity part is what's caused a lot of problem. I do know that we need a TCA director that's here. Y'all gave him $100,000, and none of you know where it went. I don't think, can you tell me where it went? It went to that company out there. The thing like that needs to be taken care of, and we need to be tracked.
Respectfully, Mr. Rao, I'd like to direct the conversation back to while we're here. Mr. Rao has been picked Mr. Frederick and the PCA board and retroactive applications, and I'm only here to present you with information. And that information is that they're legal. Whether or not you want to approve them is solely in your discretion, and that's what the Attorney General said in not one but two opinions. And so, as to retroactive applications, I'm just telling you the facts.
And
I appreciate what you've done this evening, but it seems like to me that this board needs to spend more time talking together and working through this. Even if you don't validate the application on the front end, and if you make it so that each year you're going to validate it, then again, we're at the same place. Who's going to do that?
No matter when you do it or where you do it, you still got the validation issue.
But who's going to do it? That's what I'm
going to put the burden on the applicant to tell you they're still doing it, okay?
But that's not validating.
The TCA board will do a good job for getting a director that can listen to them, what they come for. He needs to be there. He wants us to. We've been meeting once a month. He won't go to meeting.
Okay, let's do this. Let's do this. If this is something that you want the board to discuss, then why don't you, I recommend that you ask to have it on the agenda for a workshop. No, if you want to talk about the director and where he's going and what he's doing, then I think that's another agenda item. And you're free to add. Let me finish. You can add that to any agenda, a workshop, and we can discuss that if we're happy with the way things are going.
The ordinance specifies an executive director. Our name would be a Tom's. Yeah, but that I'm getting off on a tangent, but I do think it ought to be applied before they do anything, make application, put the burden on the applicant to show that they're complying with it. And I got some other issues up, but that's getting it off my chest. We can't function like it is.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your input, it's well taken.
And I agree with the reciprocity part of it. They need to come up front to start with before you build the project.
Our attorney, Mr. Bishop, has suggested that he and Mr. Curtis get together, and is everybody okay with that process? Then I would suggest let's let them get together, make some sort of proposal to us. We can rehash it then and see how it shakes out. How's that?
Okay. I look forward to working with Mr. Curtis. We'll have some fun.
Vice versa. And thank you for your time. I'm sorry it was long-winded, but it's kind of complex.
That's all right. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Mr. E, send me an email. Right.
Item number 4, the board to discuss leasing of fleet vehicles for the sheriff's office.
Can you give the attorney a copy of those?
We don't have a lease yet, man.
Yeah, we don't have.
We haven't finalized anything.
I understand that, but the copy of the lease that the attorney needs to review. Supposed lease, I would say. He just gave it to me. What's he got? Have you seen that for a bit?
Yeah, we haven't reviewed all of this or anything, so.
I need to talk.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity for me to come out here tonight. My name is Jake McCarty. I'm with Enterprise. I'm sure you guys are familiar with our rental car division. I'm actually on the fleet management side. So what we're doing is partnering with sheriff's offices, cities, counties, throughout the state, and helping them do more with less. With all of our programs, we kind of tailor to specific needs and applications of the vehicle. So what we're going to be doing with the sheriff's office here in Taylor County might not be the same as what we're doing over in Gilchrist or up in Leon County. So with everybody, we want to make sure that we're making the best recommendations and getting guys in and out of vehicles at the right time. I provided a really high-level overview of some of the services that we're providing, as well as a fleet synopsis. We've been in conversations now for a few months, just kind of going over some of our programs and what we have to offer. So as far as what we do is a cradle to grave approach to fleet management, so helping with everything from acquiring new vehicles all the way through to the resale of old vehicles. We have programs in place for everything in between, so fuel, maintenance, all that. With that, it's all a la carte, so there's nothing that says you have to do every part of the program. We just make the recommendations based on what we see fit. So what agencies are typically working with us is they have the ability to get more vehicles for the same cash outlay of what they're doing today. I'd love to answer any questions you guys might have and kind of go from there, see what you guys might know about the fleet management division or what's already been discussed.
Anybody?
We haven't had too much time. All right, well, I'll just kind of, walk through.
Let's do that. I mean, it would have been nice if we had this, prior to meeting, but
I apologize.
Let's just go through some of it.
Kind of just walk through just a, high level. So in the sheriff's office, there's about 53 vehicles that fall into our niche. We can help out with everything from their emergency response vehicles, admin vehicles, the jail transport vehicles. And from that, what we do is draw a line and say, hey, you guys buy vehicles very well, but what we're typically seeing is you guys hold on to them for a little bit too long. In our discussions, we identified about 21% of the fleet is over that 10 years of age, or over that 100,000 mile mark. With that, manufacturers are not providing any warranty work or anything on these vehicles, so they're deemed a little bit more unsafe. Just think about cell phone technology or technology has really dramatically improved over the past 10 years. So what we're seeing is kind of a standpoint of holding on vehicles past their optimal life. When we initially partnered with the City of Lake City, we helped them identify some of their underutilized vehicles. And what we set out to do is, right size the fleet, right type the fleet, and standardize. So you're not going to have a mixture of different vehicles out there on the roadways, and want to make sure that we're actually getting the best vehicle for the best price points. In doing so, we're very familiar with the Florida Sheriff's Association. That's a typical bid that we go off of. So we kind of leverage our buying power as a rental car company, and then try and get state contract pricing or better when it comes to these vehicles. The truck market right now is extremely hot. So what we're recommending with a lot of agencies is to for admin type vehicles, getting into trucks, they're holding onto them from anywhere from 12 months to 24, 36 month term, and we actually educate on when the right time to get out of that vehicle is. With our, a lot of times when people hear the word lease, they think of a traditional dealership lease. With us, there's no mileage restriction, there's no wear and tear patterns. The county would actually reap all the benefits of the resale of these vehicles. We keep you educated. As exciting as the used car market sounds, we're tracking it every single day. So we keep you educated on what your current equity position is on the vehicle throughout the life of the partnership. My goal is not to, hand the sheriff's office a set of keys and part ways. We're happy to be with you guys throughout the lifetime of the partnership, coming out, making recommendations year over year, what the best time to get the new vehicles are, what new incentives are rolling out. I've actually able to set up a test drive for the new Dodge Durango for the guys, and they're able to sit in it and see, just a little bit of a different vehicle and what they've utilized in the past. Again, what we're setting out to do for the sheriff's office, I'd love to help, the county as well, just with some of their admin type vehicles or public works trucks or different vehicles and different applications call for different leasing parameters and different hold periods. So what we might make a recommendation on one vehicle wouldn't be the same for the next. So again, it's more of a long-term partnership than just us handing you guys keys and parting ways. We want to stay local and have the vehicles order them from the manufacturer and have them actually delivered here locally to local dealerships, so you're still utilizing the local tax base. And then, from there, go out and get the vehicles in and out at the best time. What it did is actually created a fleet profile. What this did is identified each vehicle type, the number of those types, the age of those vehicles, and came up with a map of average mileage pattern that we saw in the vehicles. From there, we come up with a replacement schedule. Rather than having a generic plan of, hey, we're going to drive until the wheels fall off and put some duct tape on to get back on the road, we need to draw a line in the sand to have a specific replacement plan. So we're really lowering the total cost of ownership when it comes to these vehicles. Again, we're looking at every cost component from acquisition to resale the vehicles and figuring out strategic ways that we can shave those down and actually move buckets to save the county money. Our projected savings for the sheriff's office alone is about $392,000 over a 10-year period. Again, we're setting these up and forecasting out 10 years down the road. We're not trying to sell a bag of goods. When we initially partnered with the city of Lake City, we rolled out a similar 10-year model. In that model, we were projecting about $1.1 million in savings. The city did an internal audit of our program about 5 years into it, and they'd already recognized $1.8 million of savings just in the short 5 years. Getting into newer vehicles, stuff's covered under warranty, so you're going to see a dramatic shift of your operating expenses going down. And then, again, you're getting more fuel-efficient vehicles, so that's going to help your fuel expenditure. And safety. At the end of the day, the sheriff's need to be in the safest vehicle possible, and the technology that's out there today is significantly better for them than it was 10 years ago. Seeing just kind of the vehicles they have, there's some great ones on the road, and we need to just make sure that we're coming out and making the best proactive recommendations year over year. I understand how budgets fluctuate, so we want to tailor our recommendations and program to what actually makes the most financial sense. Again, when we're talking about vehicles, we're not talking about adding vehicles, we're talking about replacing vehicles. So your current fleet does have equity still in those vehicles, and with a lot of agencies, they're actually able to not touch the current year budget and pay for part of the partnership with the resale of old fleet. Way it makes most sense is just looking on one vehicle for the Chevy Silverado, for example. You guys are actually able to buy that vehicle significantly cheaper than the average citizen going into to a dealership. So typical sticker price is about $37,000. As a government agency, you guys can actually buy that same truck for about $24,000. What we see though is you guys buy that truck for a great buy, but it's going to be in the fleet for the next 10, 15 years sometimes. We want to shrink down that cycle and figure out what the optimal hold time for that truck is to get you in and out to make sure that you're not spending more money on operating expenditures, and that's really where the bulk of the cost of vehicles actually comes from is from there. I've included some recommendations, articles that have been written. This is one I found from City of Lake City from years ago, but just shows kind of all encompassing. We're helping them with admin vehicles, public works vehicles, the police force has our vehicles. But we want to make sure that the public's aware of you know, if they see, you know, 10 new vehicles out there on the road, they're, you know, we don't want too many questions to be asked. We want to help educate the public on how our program actually makes sense and why, how it's actually saving money utilizing a replacement schedule like we're proposing. I've also included some references there at the second end. With that, we're, like I said, kind of named out Lake City, Gilchrist County Sheriff's Office, Leon County Sheriff's Office, Department of Children and Family. All these different agencies are utilizing our services and making sure that they're at least getting the best recommendations for vehicles. As a company, we don't have any ties to a single manufacturer. What we do is line up each different vehicle and make the best recommendations to have the lowest cents per mile when it comes to having these vehicles on the road. You know, if there's any more questions, then, you know,
do these vehicles come equipped with the electronics?
That's a great question. So we're building the vehicles actually from the wheels up. So I got with Major Tompkins, and he's actually reached out. We're not in a relationship ending business, so they are utilizing some of our partners, Data Safety or Williams Communication. We utilize them. We want to make sure that we're still, you know, getting the same equipment and getting exactly the specifications for the vehicles that they're wanting on the road. But again, when we go to Ford, for example, we're building the trucks from the wheels up and walking through each specification to make sure that you're getting the exact vehicle that you're wanting.
So your question is, does it come with the emergency lights, the siren, the radios, everything that's supposed to come in the vehicle? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
It can, and it can be added into the lease. Or we can buy the equipment outright and change it from vehicle to vehicle as we change out the vehicles.
Have you done an analysis cost analysis to see what would be the best
time? As it stands now, I mean, because of the radio system we use, the proprietary systems, the state of Florida system that we changed to. So as it stands now, it's probably going to be cheaper for us to buy the equipment and move it from vehicle to vehicle. It's like $350 for them to take it out of one vehicle, put it in another vehicle, and then just lease with Enterprise. And, you know, he's talking about that prime market time when we talk to the office. Let's say we can buy a vehicle on the state contract or on the sheriff's bid for $26,000. They can buy it on the bid for $26,000. But you can't buy it for $26,000. So 2 years down the road on that truck may be worth more than the $26,000 we paid for it. That's where he talks about making the residual money. And that goes into a fund where you can put it back to the lease.
Could you do a comparison study then, like say for instance, the last 5 years, what it's cost in terms of acquiring vehicles and the maintenance and all that versus 5 years for them? Is that how you got your total savings that you're talking about?
So essentially, that top line on the 10-year model is the yellow line is actually the benchmark that we use off of your actual information. From that, we're just a buying trend over the past 3 years. You guys have been actually acquiring about seven police vehicles. That is your actual maintenance and fuel expenditure that we were provided as well. From that, that's where we establish a benchmark for Enterprise to go off of. We want to make sure that we're beating that and making sure that we're making the best recommendations to you know, actually provide those cost savings. Again, some of the things that you can't put a dollar amount on there is the increased safety for these officers and the recruitment tools that come along with the new vehicle. There's a certain sense of pride of getting in, you know, getting into a newer vehicle. So seeing those are, you know, those are some of the intangibles that we can't really quantify, but that's the best.
Did you bring the actual lease payment per year on the five during this?
I didn't think you pull that up. And
I think it was somewhere around $38,000 or $40,000. That's the annual lease payment. You have five vehicles. I can't buy five vehicles for $40,000. We can't do that even. And so once it's in the system, then like you said, it's an open-end lease. I mean, there's no mileage restrictions. It all comes down to what that residual value is at the end.
Now, let me go back and see if I understand this. $4,000 will get you five new vehicles.
Right.
Correct. And you can keep them
one to two years.
And your company is going to tell us what the optimum time is
to move those vehicles out.
And then
you replace them with?
If it's 4 years, let's say, you get us another new vehicle. Mm-hmm. And we get some residual value out of the sale of the
original vehicles. And like I say, you can't touch this.
Well, I talked to, and I can't remember which county it was, but their last, when they sold out their residual vehicle, when they started swapping their vehicles out, their residual payment money that they got paid for 8 months of a lease.
That was actually, not sure about that one, but something that we did with City of St. Mary's, for example, they had 9 of the worst year trucks they had to offer, and they were just, you know, pulling. So one of them was, we actually send a wrecker up to pick it apart and drive it down. They were able to pay for 6 months of their lease payments just on the equity they had in their old vehicles. It's going to be kind of a snowball effect. So once the program actually gets implemented, something we're doing with Citrus County Sheriff's Office, for example, they're buying these trucks and holding on to them for anywhere from that 12 to 24 months, selling for more money than they paid for it. They're having the funds go into a general fund. It's your money. It's your decision on where you actually want this the money to go. So they're utilizing that because the aftermarket that you're asking about, that's anywhere from $5 to, you know, $10, $15,000.
Actually, it runs for us if we have to put a new radio in. And everything, it runs about $14,000 per vehicle just for the equipment that goes in the vehicle.
Okay, I want to hear from our attorney.
I'm looking at this Taylor County Sheriff's Office fleet planning analysis, okay, that you've given me, sir, and given the commissioners, and I'm going to have some questions. The current fleet, there are 53 vehicles?
That includes the jail vans and the administrative vehicles and the patrol vehicles.
But that's 53, right? Okay, Marty. Okay, and it says annual needs 7. So it's 7 new vehicles each year?
Understand that of those 53 vehicles, some of them are not in service. They're vehicles that we're going to get rid of when we implement this lease.
Okay, well, there's method to my madness. Let me continue. And then it says own 53, lease 0. Purchase 207, 334. Now, what's that figure? Is that a money figure, or what's that figure?
That's a money figure.
Okay.
So, assuming okay. By those 7 vehicles, cash right now, that
cash.
Would be the cash outlay for those 7 vehicles.
Okay. All right. And then it says lease 0, maintenance 33,190. Is that correct? I'm making sure that's money. And then fuel is $122,059. That's money again, right? And then fleet budget would be $362,583. That's your budget for the first year, right?
No, that's if I'm looking at this right, this is currently what it's costing us.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant. That's what I meant. Okay, so net cash is 0, right? Okay. Then you go, let's go to 2019, right? That's under that. Okay, because this was 2018. Okay. We go to 2000. Okay, fleet size 53. That's hypothetically because you might have gotten rid of some, Marty, right?
Right.
Okay. So your needs may be more than the 7, it would be 12, right? Correct, sir?
Correct.
Okay. Owned 41, so we're leasing 12. Vehicles at that particular time in 2019, correct? All right, not 5, but 12.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Well, that is a projection he made. Now we correct this. This is
well. I got to go through this though, so I can understand, Marty. Okay. If you okay, so purchase it would be a 0, right? Because you aren't purchasing, you're leasing them in 2019 for. A figure of $93,744, right?
Correct.
Okay. So that would be on 12 vehicles, right?
Correct.
Okay. Maintenance, $30,217. Again, you have absolutely no equity in it. And then you're saying that the fuel would be, since there's new vehicles, the fuel would be less, $114,163. And then the fleet budget would be $238,124. And so you're saying by this chart that we would save $124,459?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. And then if as you go down on this, your savings are less.
So
until you get to probably, it graduates in year, what, 2025? Am I right? Or is 2026? This is so small a print for me. But anyway, yeah, it's 2026. So the net cash would go up then, and then it goes back down the next year. And you've got an asterisk here that says your lease rates are conservative estimates. Okay, so that's low estimates, right? So if interest rates go up, then they're not going to be as conservative, right? Because you got to continue to go with the CPI and that sort of thing, right? Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. And and this is based upon 10 years, and you have the same amount of vehicles, 53, right? This chart.
Correct. With
that ain't going to happen, though, is it?
No.
I mean, let's be real here. It's going to be more vehicles, right?
Correct. And with more vehicles, essentially, you would see additional
spending savings. More money. You got to spend more money because you got more vehicles, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So now, I don't understand, and I want to, you know, and I haven't looked at the lease yet. You know, I mean, they're charging me to look at the lease because I'll tell you, and if this print as little as this, because I'm going to have them like, I get upset with that, but that's okay.
I can send over a digital copy as well for it.
Give me a big one with a big font, okay? All right. But anyway, so as a practical matter, the county and the sheriff aren't owning any vehicles then at the end of when we get to year whatever. It'd be year 2023, right?
Essentially.
Okay. And how do you get money back when you don't own any vehicle and when you don't have any mileage? And I looked at some of these mileage issues up on the very top thing where it says the full size sedan, like the annual mileage is 13.9.
Yes, sir.
Our sheriff was here on our regular meeting this week and said that he puts 30,000 miles on a vehicle in a year, right?
He does, yeah.
Okay.
Not all of that, you see. But
well, would it average out to about 30,000 per vehicle?
So this is actually your figures and your numbers for the mileage patterns. There were some outliers that do go over that 25 to 30,000 miles.
Hey, I didn't look at their odometers. Yeah. All I did was I listened to our sheriff, to the high sheriff, mm-hmm. of what he said. And
so with his vehicle, we could, again, there's no mileage restrictions with us. We could structure it 25,000, we could structure 50,000 miles.
Well, what happens?
The state.
Okay. What happens? Okay. Say you lease the, you know, as I understood it, it was like a 3-year lease. Was that?
We were talking maybe 2 years for administrative vehicles and 3 to 4 years for the patrol vehicles.
Well, let's talk about the patrol vehicles because they're the ones that
correct.
You know, that they're the hardest driven, right? I mean,
right.
Chasing folks and that sort of thing and going to scenes and that. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's say we've got a really one that's really been used hard and is rough. Okay. Okay. Is it going to be a residual give back on a rough vehicle?
Absolutely. So, again, we're going to be coming out at least quarterly, you know, three, four times a year and then checking up on.
You got to inspect them, right?
Because not to inspect them, but just to show you, hey, here's what's going on in the used car market, what's the replacement we're looking get next time. How's the mileage pattern? How's everything going with the program? What's causing issues?
Who's the owner of these vehicles?
So at the end of term, you guys get all rights to the resale of these vehicles. They're on an open-end equity lease. So
in other words, we can buy them back then.
Exactly.
It's not that they're sold and we get the money. It's we can buy the vehicle after it's got 100,000 miles on it, right?
Or we can sell it on your behalf, and you would retain title and all proceeds. So
No. Wait a minute. You can sell it for us?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then, in actuality, we're buying it then?
Yes, sir.
Then we get title to a vehicle that's got 100,000 miles on it. I'm talking about the rough vehicle. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so now we own the vehicle, and you say that you can sell it for us after we buy it. And what's the difference between what we buy it for and what it's sold for? You see where I'm coming from?
So that's a great question. So the way that we structure our leases is we write it down to reduce book value on our books. So let's go back to that same truck, for example. You bought it for $25,000. On our books, we have it for $5,000. So you're only paying down the $20,000. 4 years down the road,
we didn't buy it though. We leased it.
Or leased it. But,
there's a big difference.
I think that we're getting caught up in the word lease, and that's where we're not a traditional lease. This is on an open-end equity lease. So yes, lease is in the term.
Are you talking about a lease with option to purchase? Is that what you're talking about?
You can purchase it, but there's no point in purchasing a vehicle that's $150,000.
I agree 100%. And if I'm in the public and you're selling it, you know, I do see these ex-police vehicles that run around, and I know who buy them. You know, you know who buy them. And I wouldn't give you $100 for it. Number one, it's worn out. Number two, I'd have Marty chasing me, thinking I was a drug dealer in the vehicle. You see what I'm saying?
So that's a great point you're bringing up. And you know, as a company, we've been doing this for over 60 years. So essentially, we have 2 million vehicles on the road. We sell 1.1 million of those every year. We're not trying to sell just the drug dealer or the next charger.
What's your profit margin?
What we're trying to do is figure out. So we have it on our books. Going back to that example, we have it on our books for reduced book value. We take it to market. We sell that truck. We had it on our books for $5,000. You actually sell it for $9,000. You actually would get the $4,000 difference of equity to roll back into the next round of leases.
Goes back into the next.
Or it's your
next
next
contract.
It's completely your decision on what you want to do with the money.
You can put it back into a general fund.
You can put it into a different avenue. It's completely your decision on where you want those funds to go. Enterprise makes the recommendation.
But if it don't sell, you just don't get any money back. So again, it doesn't roll back in.
What we're doing is keeping you guys informed throughout the life of the lease of what the actual equity position is. With us knowing where the current market is, we have projections and know, hey, we're canceling these vehicles rather than utilizing just an auction or gov deals. We have over 19,000 unique buyers who go out and...
Sir. Your chart on equity has got zero from 2019 to 2028.
Correct.
Zero. Now, zero means zero to me.
Absolutely. So,
nothing.
And with that, we didn't want to show, we want to be as conservative as possible. We didn't want to show, hey, you're going to get $5,000 every truck that you get with us. That doesn't make sense. We want to make sure that you guys are actually in an upright position throughout the life. So once the partnership actually is shown, I'll show you kind of a, going to get the...
All I know is that every sheriff's department I called that are currently leasing in Swanee County just signed on. So they actually just ordered their first batch of vehicles in Swanee.
So they don't know what the end result is then?
They don't yet.
Okay.
Now we have, other sheriff's departments have been using them for years.
Yeah.
And everybody says it's the best thing they ever did with their fleet, that they've saved money.
Is it because of the reduced maintenance costs? Is that what
that's a huge part. And some of these departments have huge fleets.
Right.
We're talking about several hundred vehicles,
right.
You know,
right.
But still, it, maintenance is a big consideration. When you, when we have a vehicle under warranty versus having the paperwork getting done, you know, it's...
Right.
Well, the warranty... Let me ask another question. The warranty is with the
manufacturer.
The warranty is not with y'all.
Correct.
And your lease provides that there is, I hadn't even looked at it, but I guarantee you, I think, watch out when somebody guarantees you something, that it says, we don't warrant it, and if you've got a warranty problem, you go back to the manufacturer.
So we go back to the manufacturer with you. Again, with
does it say that? Does it say that? That you go back with us?
Because
you don't know yet. We've got to look at it. Okay.
But we fight for goodwill assistance all the time. So if the vehicle has just gone out of that warranty and we can, we have good records of what has happened, we're the largest provider or purchaser of, you know, Chevy products.
But the warranties, how long is
that? That's from the manufacturer.
Is it
36
months?
36.
And 36,000 miles?
It's like Dodge Dodge 100. Yeah, so Dodge, so with Dodge.
Sound the drivetrain?
You guys get up to about 30,000 miles or Dodge 100.
I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
I'm leased heavy equipment. I have at least cars and trucks. But Ring Power furnishes the insurance on that piece of equipment. Are y'all furnishing the insurance?
It was still good. Your same insurance that you currently have. We do have insurance as an option, but a lot of times people just agencies just utilize their current insurance carrier and just go from there.
In other words, the insurance could be rolled into the lease program.
Yes, sir.
How expensive is that in comparison to?
It's probably way more expensive. We're part of the sheriff's risk fund, so
you don't want to do that.
Yeah, we don't want to do that.
Because they're going to make a profit on every dollar that you pay them because they're in business.
Right.
Because you didn't tell me what your profit margin was, and you probably don't want to tell me, do you? Or you don't even know.
It really depends on how we actually, you know, which vehicles are. But again, if we're able to, you know, save you money and be able to do more with less, if we're making money, I don't see how that's, you know, the margins I'm looking at. Going back to the 12, we could actually get 12 of the pursuit rated Durangos for a cash outlay of $93,000. Whereas you guys going out paying cash for that same 10 Durango, it's going to be $337,944. So what we're trying to do is tailor what the recommendations and getting the actual vehicles in. These are actual, you know, that's a real number for what the lease would look like. But again, we're wanting to make sure that we can maximize your cash, but thank your luck, basically, when it comes
to
it.
Question. Aaron, did you?
Not me, but just an obvious question to me that I'd like Marty or somebody maybe to think about as you go forward with this is, how much does it cost to have one of your guys put the cages and all the electronic equipment in these vehicles?
It's usually around $350 a car.
So you're going to put that cage in and all the electronics?
Yeah.
Well, the point is that you're going to be, sound like to me.
Now that's the labor fee for installing the equipment. That's not the cost of the equipment.
Well, you said the equipment will go to the vehicles.
Right.
I'm going to say this one.
Right.
If it'll fit.
Well, and that's why you won't, like we did for years and years and years, we would Crown Vicks, because everything went from one car to the next. And that's why you try to stay with a certain fleet car. Like, we were going to buy Explorers. Well, Explorers are $10,000 more per vehicle than the Dodge Durango on average, and there's none available until 2020. They remanufactured the police vehicle. It's a hybrid model, and it's not available.
You're going to be changing every 2 to 3 years while I'm out, instead of every 10 years.
Yeah.
So you need to factor the $350 per every 3 years instead of every 10 years, if it'll continue to fit. And then also, I imagine that a car that's been...
If it's been like over 10 years, it's not over 200,000 miles.
So it's not like a resale value for the West, like a truck vehicle that's got all these holes and it's got a cage in it, it's got electronics in it, than a normal one. You use that 10 car that you do it every once every 10 years for a car that has 11 resale value. These cars have less resale value than normal model thing. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong.
So that's a great point you brought up with, you know, with the holes or with all that. What we do is, those, we have security companies that are waiting for our old shares. We have the resale channel that we want to kind of steer it into. Again, we're not going to make that recommendation for it doesn't make sense because there's downtime involved with upfitting a vehicle. It takes, you know, from a week to a month sometimes for, you know, putting the cages in, putting in all those factors. So it would not make operational sense to have 12 vehicles down every month. So what we want to do is actually come up with, figure out that optimal hold time. It could be 4 years, could be 5 years. We can write the lease on a 3-year term, come to that point and say, hey, the market needs to adjust, or your guy loves the truck, he wants to hold on to it a little bit longer. You have the flexibility to, you know, extend out the lease as needed. It's completely up to you, but what we want to do is just make sure that we're getting the right vehicle at the right price and getting out of it at the right time. Holding on to it for 10 years, there isn't any resale value left in that. You're absolutely correct. There's, you know, $100 or $500 of that. If we can actually figure out for administrative trucks, for example, we're about to sell Putnam County's first round of admin trucks. They are able to actually sell for more than they paid for it, and are utilizing the additional funds to go to the next round of vehicles and then create that snowball effect. That's not the case with your patrol units because they're getting on the road for, you know, all day, every day, and out there doing 25,000 or 15,000 miles out for you guys. And again, with each different lease that we come up with or each different vehicle application, we don't have that one-size-fits-all approach. So we can structure, what might work for a public works truck that has, you know, utility body and all this other aftermarket. There's no way that you need to get in and out of that every 2 years just because the upfit cost is so significant. We want to make sure, all right, hold on to it for 5 years or 8 years, but just make sure that we're buying the best vehicle at the best time. Martin brought up the Explorer, for example. When we found out, hey, they're going to be cutting it off, they're dropping the incentive down on that vehicle, and they're changing a lot of components, we want to do a analysis and figure out, well, Dodge Durango, a lot of agencies are switching to that one just because of the additional incentive money they have out there. Year over year, we're going to go and present a cost comparison across all manufacturers. We've seen GM really making a push over the past few years to offer additional incentive money. So whereas Ford has, you know, really dominated the government sector for years, you can get a lot more money for offer a GM product than a Ford F-150. At the end of the day, we just want to get the vehicles on the ground. So we want to make sure that we provide that, the recommendations. But it's your decision on what vehicle you go with, and your decision on what makes the most financial sense. Yes, sir.
Couple of other questions now. Quit. Under this thing it says current fleet equity analysis, and then it says quantity, I suppose, 2019, 12, mm-hmm. and then 10 and 20, and then 11 and 21, 9 and 22, and mm-hmm. 11 and 2023, and then it says resale $1,000. Is that the current value of the
car? That $1,000, that's assuming the worst of the worst offenders, just $1,000 a vehicle for that. Okay. So again, we're not adding 12 vehicles to the fleet. We're replacing 12 vehicles to the fleet. So
and then in 2020 it says $2,000, and then 2021 it says $3,500, and then in 2022 $6,500, and 2023 $8,500. That's more vehicles then, right, that are leased.
So yeah, I mean,
yeah, okay.
Your lease would be mainly
because on 2023 they're leasing 15 vehicles, and you divide $8,500 by 15, you're not even going to get $1,000, are you?
I think you meant 8,500 a vehicle.
So that next line
say,
down, you're looking at the
93.5.
So that'd be the total. So the way that this is supposed to read is, well, year one, we're getting rid of 12 vehicles. On average, they sell for $1,000 a piece. Once we start doing the snowball effect that we were talking about, selling a 2-year-old truck, you're going to get a lot more money than a 10-year-old Crown Vic. Can we all agree on that?
Yeah.
So what we're going to start seeing is a domino effect. Once we actually are selling these vehicles at the right time, this equity in your fleet is actually these numbers, as you see, year over year, is going to start falling and adding into
your fleet. You got a double asterisk here on the bottom in red. Mm-hmm. And listen to this one. I think somebody from Philadelphia wrote this one. Okay. Estimated current fleet equity is based on the current fleet sight unseen and can be adjusted after physical inspection.
Correct. So
what does that mean?
So when I get the fleet data, they send me the VIN and the mileage of these vehicles. We have a fleet strategy manager who he just sits there in the lab all day and just runs the numbers and says, hey, this vehicle, here's what the average resale actually looks like. We actually put values on your vehicles. The number's actually significantly more than that $1,000 mark.
Wait a minute. When I go to trade my vehicle in on a new vehicle, mm-hmm. all right, they don't base it on sight unseen. Wait a minute, let me finish. The man comes out and looks at it. Now, it's really based on what the year, model, and how many mileage is on it, but he still comes out and looks at it. Because if he doesn't come out and look at it, he's crazy as a sprayed roach in my estimation. So how many of these things do they come out and look at, or do they just base it on sight unseen?
For a free consultation analysis, my fleet strategy manager to come down here. Once we actually take your vehicle to market, we're going to pick up the vehicle, drive the vehicle,
surely
take it exactly where it needs to go, and it's your decision on if that dollar amount makes sense for the resale.
I can tell you when we take them to auction now, they average between $800,000 for a Crown
Vic. Okay. Yeah.
But again,
but you haven't done with it. You haven't done with a 10-year-old Durango either, have you?
We won't be, because they'll be rolling out before the 10-year-old. That's why your residual value will be higher, because you're rolling it out sooner.
And then this net cash, it's got three asterisks on it in red, in very small print. It says, net cash is the sum of the 10-year savings from the fleet planning analysis and the estimated current fleet equity.
Correct. So what that is a combination of the savings of your operating expenditures. Again, new vehicles, less maintenance expenditures. We went over everything's been covered under your warranty. You're getting with CAFE standards. Vehicles are required year over year to come out and have better fuel economy. So you're going to see a shifting of the buckets there. And then next would be the equity in these vehicles.
Yeah.
Again, as you're selling new vehicles, you're not getting $1,000 for a. If I sold a 2016 truck right now for $1,000, I'm not half a job.
Half a bargain.
There's no possible way. So if we're selling a 2-year-old or 3-year-old truck, we can all agree that truck is going to bring back more bang for the buck than a 10-year-old truck. We just wanted to just show this is the kind of high-level philosophy. Once we actually dive into an actual program, you would actually see the cost benefit and see the improvement of your fleet efficiency.
You mentioned Putnam County. How long have y'all been? Is it Putnam County Sheriff's Office?
Yes, sir. So Citrus County, that'd be a better example. So they're on their third round of doing this truck model. They're buying about 30 trucks.
So Putnam County is on what round?
They are about to take delivery of their second round.
Okay, and you said Citrus County is third.
Yes, sir.
Third
round.
Believe me, let me explain something to you.
Correct.
1 year, 2 years.
1 year, 2 years. with Citrus, I think they held them for about 9 months. There's a flexibility in opening that release. You can get out of the vehicle at any time. Manufacturers have a minimum hold pattern. You guys can't buy a vehicle for $24,000 today, turn around tomorrow and sell it. Manufacturers have stipulations involved with that. So what we do is figure out when the restriction is to for holding the vehicle, and then have the opportunity to sell it at the actual right time. We come down and we are on a 2-year term. You guys decide, hey, my guy loves this truck, we want to hold on to it. You have that flexibility. City Lake City, they've been on board with this program for almost 9-10 years now. So there may be a more long-term partnership. I have the article written kind of about that, and I can provide a budget message that was written internally, did an internal audit from the 14-15 budget year, as well as 17-18 did another rollout. As a company, we knew our wheelhouse was in primarily, you know, passenger vehicles, trucks, stuff like that. Over the past 3-4 years, that's when we really got into the emergency response vehicles. So what we're now working a lot with sheriff's offices throughout the state, and each different one is coming on with a different program. What we're seeing, though, is again, we're talking, you know, just doing 4 vehicles for the same cash outlay as one new Durango, essentially.
Okay, question, now, I'm going to try to ask 2 questions. Caveat, there aren't enough questions here tonight. What I'm reading is over a 10-year plan that if we purchase these vehicles and we get on this plan, then we're going to save this county $169,518, according to the numbers that you provide us. Is that correct? Correct.
In the operating.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, in the operating.
Yes, sir. So it says net cash. Mm-hmm. And the total 10-year savings in net cash should be $169,000. Which is nothing but still left. Now, second question. Is this lease agreement going to be with the county commission or with the sheriff's office?
Ideally, I'd like to work with the commission as well and work with all vehicles you guys have on the road. We can help out.
Yep. You know, sheriffs everywhere, I guess everywhere, they're going to stand for election every so often. What happens if we were to get a new sheriff and he decided, I don't like all this mess? Then he turns all this fleet vehicles back into him, and then we got a big hole to fill if we had to buy all this vehicles. Mm-hmm.
That was a concern with Sheriff Patton, just making sure that you guys aren't locked in with in the lease agreements. You guys do have the flexibility to get out of the vehicles at any time. So if you sign up for, you know, 4-year contract, 2 years in, new sheriff comes in, he decides he doesn't want to be part of it, you can just buy the vehicle at that point for the reduced book value, rather than holding on to, or we're not going to come out and repo all your trucks. Is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah, I don't want to be.
Yeah, we don't.
I don't want to own a sheriff coming up here and say, I didn't like this lease agreement. We turn them all back in. Mm-hmm. I need 10 cars. $1,000 piece. That's $500,000. Call me up. I don't want to be caught in that scenario.
Correct. And that's something that, you know, as a company, we don't ever want to put anybody in that predicament. And we want to make sure that, you know, you guys are in the right up position throughout the life of the lease. So we want to, you know, stick with you guys and, you know, as new people come in, work with them and educate them. But as maybe Tompkins has talked to agencies throughout the state, they've seen nothing but, you know, positive.
I've already urged you to call the references. I mean, yeah.
Now, you can get these vehicles for $40,000, right?
Well, I mean, he'd have to put it the exact, but it's right around that figure, yes, for
all right, you have $40,000 of the 1 cent sales tax money left.
I do, yes, sir.
Can that 1 cent sales tax money be used for a lease agreement?
That's a good question.
I don't seem like couldn't allow another lawyer.
It is a capital outlay expense.
How are you capital? How is it a capital outlay expense when it's a lease? That's a good question.
It needs to be answered before we go into any further in this discussion.
Yeah.
Unless Marty's got parked out and there's another button.
And that would probably die.
Commissioner, if I may, we asked for the auditor's opinion the last time when we leased the body scan. And his opinion was that the 1 cent sales tax dollars could be used for lease payments.
Did we do that within the hospital money that was paid for? You know, we gave the hospital several years ago $2 million of the sales tax money.
and the hospital.
At least you have
to mention you got off. Part of the itself has a huge release agreement. I know that for a fact.
Yes.
So
they
can
answer the question.
It's been done before.
No, it has.
The ones that sell tax money used for, to lease equipment is actually in the.
It happens. It happens. What happened was we did check with the bond council. Remember, we got an opinion on that because wasn't it some kind of CTV, MRI equipment?
Yes, I believe it was.
It was. It was. Yeah, and it was leased. Now, I don't know whether it was a lease to buy, though. I don't know.
In the MRI case, they did wind up with the final machine as a purchase.
As a purchase, yeah.
Now, we wouldn't have to go to bond council on this. We've already paid off that bond.
Right, the bond's been paid off, yes.
Yeah. So, what I heard, it all sounds pretty good to me. Conrad asked a lot of thorough questions.
Absolutely. And that's what we're here for. We were recently awarded the source flow contract. It used to be NJPA, was the number one fleet management company out there. A lot of agencies are piggybacking off that contract just to make sure that we're sharing our best practices and doing exactly what we're out to do. But I just didn't, 10 vehicles, just as easy as math as possible. Our projected numbers, those 10 trucks are $28,000. Paying cash, $281,000 would be your cash outlay to get those 10 trucks. I'm proposing $78,000 as your cash outlay for these same trucks year over year. At the end of term, again, you're going to have projected equity in these vehicles. That number is right at about $35,000 of additional money to go into the next round of vehicles. So, again, it's just going to be a snowball effect, and once we actually, are in these vehicles, you actually start seeing the cost benefit.
This might be a good thing for Bruce, like in the property appraiser's office, where he can just roll these trucks over every couple of years or whatever. It would cost him less money than to buy a vehicle outright.
Because pick up so here on this side.
Because you don't have to install a bunch of equipment in them.
When he's a property appraiser, Milo Nzongo is the director for property appraisers down in Brevard County. I recommend reaching out to him. He's seen nothing but success from our program with them. So, Lake City's another great one. Miami-Dade Schools, I know they're just a significant improvement just to the overall improvement tools that new vehicles come with. The driver safety and safety aspects that come along with 2019 vehicle versus a 2007 Crown Vic is significant. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, or don't want you guys to feel like you're a guinea pig by any means. So that, the more references and the more people I can get you guys to talk to and understand the philosophy behind it, the better.
Are you getting all those names?
I think
each one of the names and their contact information is on the last page.
Jay, could you just email that to Conrad?
Yes, sir.
Well,
email him the lease agreement.
Now, I'll send a digital copy of all of this presentation, kind of just the full breakdown of what we're proposing. And if there's any language in the contract that needs to be redlined, I can go back to our corporate office. It's kind of the general master lease agreement that we have with government entities, but we can. Work on your behalf to make sure that it makes sense in a couple of ordinances.
Comrade, on the county's procurement policy, do they have to be declared a sole source leasing company before the board does not have to advertise for leasing vehicles?
What you're talking about would be to advertise.
There's other leasing companies out there that could probably offer the board.
Well, one question that I've been thinking about is, who signs the lease agreement? Does the county or does the sheriff?
That was one of my questions.
I think if it deals with the sheriff's vehicles, the sheriff would sign the lease.
Yeah. I think what the sheriff was doing when he came was just to tell y'all
what he planned to do.
What he planned to do.
Yes.
And so, and if he has the, you know, the ability to use, was that 25%? For 3 years. If he signs the agreement, and the county doesn't have any liability.
Well.
Well, you have liability when you come back up asking.
Budget.
Right.
Yeah. Well.
Budget.
We have a responsibility to. We would issue purchase orders, and we have to make sure when you're talking about the 1 cent money, we control the purchasing, and we have to follow our own procurement procedures. So to answer, so one of the questions I had for Marty is how we would work, would we need to do an RFP for the leasing services, or could they purchase on our behalf from the...
You could piggyback somebody.
Right. Right. We could piggyback any of those that are just right. Entered into this agreement.
But those are the thoughts that came into my mind, and then speaking of the 1 cent money.
And I think they're also listed as preferred provider with the Florida Sheriff's Association.
Right. But if there is, if at the end of the lease, if we use 1 cent money to purchase, and that's in a separate fund, not fund, but that's in a separate department, those funds are kept separate. So at the end of the lease, as far as if those funds are returned, would they go back to the 1 cent fund? I mean, we separate those funds pretty carefully.
I think that the sheriff would totally agree that any residual money would go back into the 1 cent sales tax fund because you're giving that money for capital outlay purchases.
I mean, I don't want to get into the weeds with all of that before.
But what you need to know is the sheriff's officer, whoever is doing this, is buying it with tax money or sales tax money.
Got two different things there. Right. Suwannee County could have bought it from their reserve for capital stuff,
right?
And not through a sales tax.
So anything
purchased with the 1 cent money does go through the county's purchasing. You know, we do the purchasing, and
so same thing you just did with the scanner. Right. The sheriff signed the contract for the scanner, but it's coming out of the 1 cent sales tax.
But we still had to get bids and all of that stuff. I mean, we couldn't, there was, I mean, we still had to follow the policy.
We followed the policy before they were sole source, but if they're preferred providers of the Florida Sheriff Association on that bid list, and they're buying the vehicles at the FSA bid price, then.
Right. But I think the one on the scanner is set up on 3 year lease plan.
We set it up on 3 years.
3 years because the county has limited the sheriff to 25% for 3 years.
Yes.
That's why it has to be set up.
Well, the sheriff's going to have the money whether it comes out of 1 cent sales tax for capital outlay or whether it comes as 25% of the 1 cent sales tax as capital outlay. We replace all capital outlay in our budget with the 1 cent sales tax money. So it's got to come out of one or the other. So if he enters into the agreement and it's coming out of 1 cent sales tax, you decide he can't have it anymore. Then it's going to have to be added to his general revenue budget.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's just something to think about. I would be the same way whether you're buying cars or leasing cars or whatever you're doing. If you do away with him having the 1 cent sales tax portion, then it's going to have to be added back into the budget as capital outlay.
That'll be after my time here today.
Well, maybe mine too, maybe mine too.
Well, would it be?
Two other suggestions for staff. I mean, one, I noticed you said in the beginning to that 3 year picture. Start with what was happening the last 3 years?
Correct.
I would highly suggest we get a 10-year picture instead of just a 3-year picture to include new purchases as well as maintenance costs. I think the big savings here is through the last maintenance, correct? But it would be fair to ask Danielle or the Sheriff's Department to look at what's our 10-year picture on what we spend on the Sheriff's fleet and compare that to his 10-year picture more forward. And then secondly, if you're going to call
that'll be skewed a little bit in the fact that vehicle pricing has increased expeditiously over those 10 years.
That's true.
Well, is this lease a 10-year or a 3-year?
This was three.
Three.
They took the last 3 years where they took, and I just suggest maybe go back to a public company.
Yeah, but I just wanted to know what the lease was going to be. The period was 3 years.
Right.
And finally, I would suggest you call the finance officers. of these places that he's had for more than 2 or 3 years. Not necessarily, I saw one of the buyers talking. People that have to pay the bills, the ones that, well, the fire trailer, of course, because they're the ones that can tell you, are we doing better or are we doing worse?
Except for your sheriff's offices, that's going to be their finance director, he's the sheriff's office that pays those bills.
I would disagree. I think you're going to, what you just said, we go to the ship, we go to the.
No, what I'm saying is, if the sheriff's office leases the vehicles, it's going to be their finance director's going to be able to take, they're paying the bills out of the general revenue fund.
And I'm going to say, if you're going to the county commission finance director, ultimately get your money, they're going to know ultimately, are we spending more or less than the sheriff's office bids? You understand what I'm saying?
No. Because whatever's in our budget is as far as the line item. They may or may not split that out to tell you what they spent on vehicles or didn't spend on vehicles. They don't have to. So. Anyway, I'd like to say
Did I hear you say actually early on you said we actually could sell a vehicle for more than we bought it for?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's the semantic stuff.
Well, here's how you do it. You share a GMC.
Because you
get a couple of not the Silverado, whatever the GMC version is. Silverado, the Sierra.
GMC Sierra, for
you. You can't buy that vehicle for $28,000. But we can. Okay. And you have to maintain that vehicle for, because of manufacturer restrictions for X number of time. But still, 2 years down the road, a $40,000 vehicle is still worth $28,000, $29,000. So that's how they're being
able to track it. Probably not the patrol.
Probably not patrol, but administrative it definitely would. And that's what they're saying. I mean, they look at the market every single day. I mean, the Enterprise is a huge company. They look at the market every day. They know what the vehicles are doing.
Yeah, we're not going to make that recommendation on a patrol unit that's going out and, you know, it's in a chase or, you know, in a wreck or anything like that. But if it's a property appraiser who's going from point A to point B or someone just going to it from the office, we can really tailor that. And
I just want to say to the board, we didn't haphazardly come across this and actually have it presented to you. We did a lot of research on this. And we called all these offices that are currently using them, and every one of them had good things to say, that they all saved money.
Okay.
So,
I think we've been, you know, talking about this for a long time. I want to thank you for coming and doing the presentation and answering the questions. And I don't know, I guess it's ultimately going to be up to you all.
To the sheriff.
Yes.
So.
I think y'all still want me to look at the lease. Still want me to look at the lease, though, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So,
okay. He said yes.
Yes. Well, let's do that. We'll have our attorney to look at the lease once you get it, and then you can go from there.
Yes, ma'am. He didn't tell me what it took until it does in New York.
Ideally, you know, we just wanted to, you know, introduce the concept to you guys, and, you know, we'd love to help out the sheriff's office, but, you know, county vehicles would be a great, you know, next step. And I'd love to put together an actual model of what, you know, a full, you know, full focus problem.
We'll see how this goes, and then you know,
I'm
county administrator. I may want to contact you after that.
Okay.
And see.
So,
thank you so much.
Well,
thank you.
Call. Anything else? My contact information's on here, and I think that's
all. Call and do some data.
Thank you.
Thank you. Contact. You have your email address on the
board. If he'll come over here, I'll whisper it to him.
Okay,
I don't want anybody. We had some fun, didn't we?
We did. It was good.
Yeah. It's small caps.
About the suggested priority submission to
for the Department of
Transportation. I'll try to have that one for
you. Okay. Thank you. Nice to meet you, sir. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Good to meet you.
And what did you say about 2023? Okay. This priority list will be for 2023 submission to the program. So we will submit it now in 2020. This is the outlook for year 2023. Now, included in your packet is a copy of last year's letter to DOT with the number of the roads listed. And I also gave you the tentative fiscal year 2020 to 2024 five-year plan from DOT. So the majority of the roads that you that we will focus on in the FDOT plan is the highway local roads and the off-state highway system, off-federal system.
What
will be the page
number? Is it this one?
Yes. Okay. And I think y'all have seen this list before.
Yes.
Is it? I don't think so. I've recapped it on the first page. I have the email from Kenneth.
Let me specifically ask, if I may.
Yes, sir.
The Slaughter Road and Gas Plant Road, they've been on this list for years and years and years.
And they are currently awaiting design.
What does that mean, awaiting design?
They're in line. So we have...
First, we had a time frame of 2018. Mm-hmm. We just got moved to 2020.
Yes, sir.
And now there's no time to even specify.
Well, I believe the way the roads are listed is in probably in time order. So San Pedro Road is out for bid. Howard Road is in design with 2020 construction. Pinecrest Street in design. North, East and North Ellison Road, right-of-way approval pending. Bolicotta Road in design, and Slaughter and Gas Plant Road are awaiting design.
So design seems to be the hookup for all of these?
Maybe.
Maybe or is.
Well, I don't know how to answer that. I'll get an answer.
I'm sorry, I put you on the spot.
It's okay. I don't want to answer for our engineering department. Without asking directly. What I can say, if you look at this list, okay. Slaughter Road has a date of 2020 construction, is what it looks like.
2020?
Mm-hmm.
And we have started on design. Okay.
Okay.
All right, Mrs. Woodward.
Well, you can ask as many as you like. I might not be able to answer them directly. So, the suggested priority submission is for from what staff has presented is Spring Warrior Road, Buckeye Credit Union Road, and McDaniel Road in that order. And that's based upon the pavement condition score that's assigned by DOT and the Public Works Director. So it's based upon severity. So we're looking out to 2023, but I wanted to provide you the current information so you would have a snapshot, but I will get an answer for you.
Okay, now on San Pedro is out for bid, and Ellison Road, we're waiting for the Broadway approval.
Mm-hmm. So that part is
we can pretty much say that San Pedro and East and North Ellison will have construction this year in 2019, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
And that's what we've been given in the past, that it was in 19. And then, as a reminder, on San Pedro Road, we have a commitment to pave Ellison Bridge, and we have a commitment on Ellison Road to pave Kingston Tanner. They're both very short, but we made a commitment to a lot of people several years ago, and I'm trying to keep up with that, as everybody well knows. And these people are depending on that, and we promised them, and I want to make sure that we don't forget that.
That is on all of them, isn't it, Pam?
Say again?
That commitment is on all of these roads. You know, you get on San Pedro, Cobb Road, Pinecrest, Ellison, Cola Cutoff. It's a lot of roads less than I get, but. Isn't it? Don't we have that commitment on all of those roads? Did we get to them as quick as possible? And my hat's off to somebody. Look back at the amount of money we need, we don't have.
Right.
I just can't answer, I can't answer the question of why it's taken so long for them to get to this point, just because I'm stepping into this.
Yeah, I can understand that.
But this is my understanding of where we are today, that I wanted to provide to you.
Well, can I ask you this question? You might have said one last one more question.
It's all right.
Pat Daniel Road has been listed on the list for a long, 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 long time. And that's got leapfrogged by two other roads. And you said that this is because FDOT and county staff prioritized the needs of those other roads ahead of this road.
My understanding.
What do you have a board of county commissioners for? Why are we doing all this if somebody else is going to prioritize the roads? That's what's frustrating.
I understand. And I will ask that question.
I feel like I'm wasting my time. You prioritize roads, and I've seen this over and over and over and over and over, and then suddenly you tell your constituents, this is on the list, and it's supposed to come up in a year, whatever, X, Y, Z. And then suddenly the priorities all change.
I feel the same way.
You feel the same way, right, Jim?
I really do.
Yeah.
I got roads, Plain Beach Road. We talked Van Basin Road 3-4 years ago. We're going to live, we're going to take care of it. I didn't even want to wait on this when I went to talk to you the other day with us.
Well, if y'all remember when this Pat was on the board, every year.
Pat Road has been there since I've been on this board. And it's still, that's right.
And it's still in design and the construction is 2020.
Yeah, well, I could say that I've been here for over 8 years now. And San Pedro and East and North Ellison and Pinecrest was on the list when I got here over 8 years ago.
I remember you saying, Pam, Pine Place, remember you had a wreck on that curve. Remember you saying that? Didn't you say you had a wreck on that
curve? I didn't have a wreck on that curve, but I've had quite a few. I've had friends over in that area, and I've had them to bring it to my attention that it's such a dangerous road. And it is. On that curve, it's narrow.
Yeah, you got more traffic going down than ever did. It's a couple of 27 and everything downtown Perry on my team.
Right. Yeah. And we used to live on that curve, and our mailbox was run over all the time.
It might fold right there in that curve. It's been broke off, and then they use them for stops there, and there's been too many red lights on the curve. It needs widening and redone.
Well, the thing is, though, the ones that have been on here the longest time, it just seems like to me that we would go by whenever they were put on the list. It's going to be changing them. If it was put on the list, and then yours was put on the list next year, and somebody else is the next. So we need to go by when they were put on the list.
Well, I think, when Kenneth was talking to y'all about that, he said that he was trying to keep the plan to the point where the scraps and scopes funding could be used to the highest level, because some of that is a 75-25 match, and then some is 100%, one of the programs is 100%. And he tried to keep maybe the longest roads on the top, so the state pays for them with the money that they put down, rather than to use your local. I think that's what.
Who did you say was doing that?
Yeah, it was talked
about. In other words, Kenneth
You'll figure out one, right?
Well, he's trying to pick the roads that maximizes your dollars with the scope and the spread.
Based upon the condition and the length of the roads.
And that makes sense to me. I mean, with him doing that, he's trying to get the most bang for the buck. And I can't criticize him for doing that.
I think his priority should be to go right down that road and one that's in worse shape needs to be in top of the list.
That's right.
Well, that's my understanding of what this is.
Just like Calp Road, it needs it. It's a dangerous road and gets the world attractive.
And I think that's one reason why it's been put off to 2020 is because either the scraps or the scopes are going to be used on that road.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I think what I've seen, I guess I'm lucky. I've been on this board 14 years, and I've gotten three roads today. Which Creek Road, which is a big one. And Osteen Road, half of that's in Commissioner Dent's district, the other lane over there is in my district. That's a pretty good side road. And that little old Andrew Green Road, 6 tenths of a mile long, I guess ought to be the three little roads today, all in 14 years.
You have got an unpaved road in your district, Mr. Payne.
I came into the district where they had a lot of paved roads and they fallen apart. I hate slow roads. I'm at the point where the way the thing is working, just turn all the road paving money over to Kenneth and let him decide what he wants to do with it.
I don't know about that.
It comes to the point. Who runs the show down here? We have a responsibility to answer the citizens. And you make a decision, and then you change the thing before you ever get anything done. I'm just frustrated.
Now, it was my understanding that he has a list, and he takes from the top of the list, it goes on this list, and then the list continually moves up. I can clarify with him.
Well, we had Slaughter Road all prime. Give us recommendation. It did happen. And I speak a little bit about that, but it's not all that long, 3 miles long. It's good both halves, both parts. I guess it shouldn't bust. Took a half road. But anyhow, I'm through busting. I think you get the drift the way I am.
Yes, sir, I do. And Kenneth is not here, but when things come up and he feels like that he can get more bang for the buck by doing whatever, maybe a suggestion would be come and talk to us about it. Instead of we get a paper and then all of a sudden we realize that something has been changed, and mine's been changed before too. And then we wonder, well, how did this happen? And we never really got a clear answer. I kind of understand it tonight. But I think maybe more communication. But the things that we've already promised our people, I'm not willing to back up on that because I don't want to go through that.
Well, and the letter that we wish to submit is for 2023 submission. I just provided you with all the information so you would be able to see a snapshot of where we are.
I don't understand why it's getting priority when a mile of paving is a mile of paving. It don't matter if it's north end of county, it's a beach or where, A mile in, a mile of paving or half a mile, it's the same price. Widening and resurfacing, it doesn't matter who district it's in. It's still
the right one for it.
Exactly. So I don't see where he got that list. How that priority to say the same best thing for a book comes from. I don't understand.
We need more explaining.
It's because you don't have enough local match to do the entire length of the road. The state stopped and scrapped about 25%, 50%. If you don't have enough match, you can only do 8 miles and your road's 12 miles. It's kind of what you got 4 miles and you can't pay this shit. That's doesn't make sense for my when you call it mobilization standpoint, when you're jumping from little road to little road, you can get a lot less bang for your buck.
I understand that part of it. The thing is, I don't know.
I don't care where you come, just explain what he said. I'm regurgitating what he said that time ago.
There's a deal this month, but there's a good chance.
Well, I have sufficient funding. Mm-hmm. Just wait to be a code, that's it, so when they want me that back.
100 yards of brother child.
And you always have the option. I think you're going to say you always have the option to dip in to find some money somewhere and pay for 100% of it yourself. It just is real expensive how they can do that. He's trying to.
No, I apologize. I just trust me.
I understand.
I think you're doing a good job.
My question to the board is, for the 2023 submission, I mean, this is the list, and it doesn't, this is based upon his, on our recommendation to DOT. We would like to submit this letter, and then if you would like more, we can certainly come back to the board and he can explain in depth about our road priorities.
Okay, now just like here, it says the bids are due this month, but there is also a good chance San Pedro Road will not have sufficient funding to complete the road as bid, so we may want to add it back to the list.
That's the one you already done part of it.
San Pedro, but none of it's been done. None of it's been done.
What's the road going by the church?
San Pedro is going by the fence.
Bridge Street runs
to San Pedro.
That's where.
Well, it was paved along the way out there. It stopped.
The cross has been on the front end. Was it not correct or what?
I'm not sure. I just got this this morning, and I will clarify that. I am not exactly sure. I mean, I asked them for updated info so I could give the board a snapshot of this because I knew there would be questions. As soon as I said road paving, I understand, and I understand there's frustration. So I will get some clarity about that, because then that makes me wonder about Ellis and Frith and Hinkson Tanner, since
well,
it's all being done at the same time.
You know,
now those were going to be paid out of local funds.
They were.
What we're going to do is add
them. Yes. But what the agreement was when we had that room full of people here, was that it made more sense if it was ever going to get done a quarter of a mile, that's all we're talking about, that while they were there resurfacing and had all the equipment there, that it would be more cost effective to do it then. We're never going to pay somebody to bring all their equipment in to pay a quarter mile road. That will never happen. So, while they're already there, you've got one like that, and we've done that.
We did that once.
Just like Miss Hunt Road and Industrial Drive, end to end, they get the same amount of traffic. The crew traffic between 19 and the golf course road.
Right.
And when they do Hunt Road, they can do Industrial Drive, you know, right on up to 19.
Right.
I mean, the same thing, what you say, you know, when you got the equipment out there, you need to do that one.
Like Astrid,
you know,
part of it, isn't it?
But, I mean, you look for driving badly. It's just like out there, and it gets the same amount of traffic cut through there, and all them heavy seminars coming and going out there. I mean,
you know, this county has really, I don't know the history of all of this, because I've only been here for 8 years, but as you ride around, we have a lot of bad roads.
Spring Water is a good example.
And I look in my district where I ride all the time, I'm thinking, how many years and years and years will it be, if ever? And the roads are deteriorating, and I don't see how we can ever catch up with it.
I don't think we can get enough scrap and scot money to keep up the roads that we already got paved.
No, we don't.
We don't.
We don't.
And then when you add another road, you pave another one, then you got more maintenance.
Mm-hmm. This high water really took its toll. All that rain took its toll on the old road. Yeah. You got stuff chipping out of the middle of them, but the lime rock got. Water went down through the crack in the road and the lime rock.
You
got big potholes in the old road right now from all this high water for the last 2 years.
Can we use some of the 1-6 sales tax money to took for roads?
Yeah, that's true.
I believe we can.
The best comrade, while he was here, because your ordinance
states? Our ordinance states infrastructure and not in dredging, correct?
What it says is capital improvement, including but not limited to the canals. Including what?
But not limited.
I looked at some of the statutes today, and under some of them, it goes into all about roads and that kind of stuff, but I don't, does transportation surface? That's not what yours is under. That covers all about roads, but you've got it designated as capital.
Yeah, and you know, I think we've been talking about the dead-end curve.
That's not even out here.
Well, I believe that's because our agreement with DOT was that we would obtain the right-of-way before we asked for scrap or stop funding.
And where are we at on that?
We sent out more letters. I could not find any information on that, where we were. So we basically started from scratch. And the property owners, who we did not know if they had made contact, we sent out new letters. I believe that was last week.
Yeah, I would probably guess that probably that's the worst that's happened, what you just did. But, so when we get that back, help me remember, who's going to pay for the acquisition? So that's out of county money.
Mm-hmm.
Can any of the recovery money be used for that?
So here's what I'll say about the recovery money, and this is, you know, I've had only a little time to try to catch up, but my understanding of the recovery money is that everything designated in the state expenditure plan is expressly for land acquisition to provide access, water access. We've had several calls with Gulf Consortium asking them to help us understand exactly what that means. If we can add properties, when we add properties, our advice was, well, you really might want to consider taking some of the properties off because you have a lot of properties, and we have 15 properties listed now. And in order to move forward, we would need feasibility studies on 15 properties, if that's going to be our ranking level. So on the 17th, I have material for the board that will review that. So I'm not sure at this time. We can make changes to our SCP, but if we get too far off track of what we said our goal was, we will have to file for an SCP amendment. And that goes through a public commenting period, and that kind of starts that process over again, but we can do that. I do, and this is more of a discussion for the 17th, but I would encourage the board for us to work together and try to formulate a more clear plan.
Absolutely.
Of what we want to do with the Restore Act funding.
Yes.
Yeah. Even our budget is a little confusing, the way the money is laid out within our budget.
Well, we can talk about that next Thursday.
Yes.
That's.
So, what I'm hearing the board say is that you want us to come back to the board and talk about our rotating priority in more depth and be able to answer some questions and further explain why we use the system we use to determine the pavement conditions, which, you know, basically determines the severity of the road. Correct?
Yeah. Let me ask this. So I know you're talking, but have you been paving every year since you've been here or before you got here?
No.
We haven't been paving every year? They hadn't done enough?
I don't think
maybe about a red one.
Going on every year.
I don't know. A little research. You know, once in a while.
Yeah, I know they worked out there on Johnson's Cooper Road quite a bit. That was
a lot of money on that.
Was it?
Yeah.
So we spent a couple of years money on that. Is that what we done?
I don't know. I wasn't here. We may have.
Yeah. Well, what happened out there, see, it started out, you know, Johnson Strickland makes that turn, and it turns into Robert Zangman Road.
Mm-hmm.
So just prior to me being elected, part of Robert's Amen Road was resurfaced.
Mm-hmm.
They only used the amount of money that they had. It went so far and then it stopped.
Wow.
And then after more money was available, after some time, 4 years, then the Robert Stangman was completed and Johnson Stripling. Let me just tell you that FDOT did studies on Johnson Stripling. And there were several fatalities.
Yeah, I remember.
And so they took all that into consideration
and
highly recommended that dangerous road be done. Now, you can look at Dead Man's Curve, and there's been a lot of fatalities there.
For years.
And I lost my mother and my aunt on that curve. And there's been people since then. And so, the problem, the problem that we've got is I do believe that we've got some roads that are in worse shape than others and some that are more dangerous. But then we've got the problem that for 8 years or 14 years or however long, we've been telling these people, and I have actually sent this to my people and said, okay, here it is. I circled it. Your road's going to be done at 19. Here it is right here. And yes, we're going to pay this because it was decided. Now we come along and say, oh, maybe we're not going to do that? I mean, we have to answer these people that hired us. I'm not fussing with you. I'm just saying the way it is.
You get like me now, but all right, go ahead.
You know, these people hired us and we've told them something. And they quit to tell you that you're a liar.
I've been here 6 years, going on seven, and Alp Road has been brought up every year.
Every year, yeah.
Since I've been.
But it was before you were here, too.
Right.
It was.
So, I mean, I don't know. I've
heard Plantation brought up. I've heard Springwood Road brought up all these years. And I've heard Industrial Drive brought up, Plantation, But they ain't on the same, they're not on the front of that.
And my friend at the end of the table here, Christian Murphy, that road in front of the Steve Hatchie still, it's not on the list there, is it?
No, it's on the list. It's programmed for 2020.
2020.
The fairway to do it is the one that gets the most traffic and in the worst shape.
That's our road that it costs.
And the most people have been killed in Dead Man's Curve, that can be done
that's
first.
For, that's for our secondary roads. We use that for the secondary road paving. We use the pavement condition score for the DOT road.
Okay, the secondary roads, those are the ones that are not paved. Is that what a secondary road is?
Well, secondary roads are, basically, So.
Unpaved road.
Right.
Okay. All right. Learning something new every night. Another 14 years, I'll have it mastered.
Okay, thank you for this information.
Okay, thank you. Don't take this
person. I got it. I understand.
I'll park on that work lot.
Yes, sir.
I'm getting friends.
I know.
Number six, the board to discuss the Blue Creek roll-off site hours of operation.
This is actually Commissioner Murphy's item, but we did want to provide the board with the schedule. Of the roll-off sites, so you would have it handy, and so I would have it handy.
Is Blue Creek the same as Blue Springs?
Yes, I'm sorry. That's probably my fault.
Yes.
Okay, Commissioner Murphy, you
want to speak? Yes, basically what I'm trying to bring to the board's attention is that there is a discrepancy between the uniform listing of our hours, meaning there's different hours for different belts in the county.
Mm-hmm.
My constituents want to know why we have to wait out there on the beach till 2 p.m. to go dump our trash, in which we have to break our day. We have to stop what we're doing in the middle of the day and go get the trash. We can't do it at 9 in the morning, and we can't do it where we don't know what time the dump is open. That's one of the most biggest questions and most asked questions I have in my district is, what's going on with them? Why can't we have a uniform, meaning if the dump is in the north end of the county, it should be open at 9 a.m., east end of the county should be 9 a.m., and west end of the county should be 9 a.m. So there should be like on the like a uniform citation code on the back of the sign, that way you know which law the sign says is 55 miles an hour. It's uniform throughout the whole state. A stop sign is uniform throughout the whole state. So we're trying to get the dumps opened in a uniform manner. So that if I'm riding along and I'm 2 p.m. and I've got a dump at the beach down here, but at the same time, the dump in the north end of the town is open at 9 a.m. Okay, so it creates confusion. And since 06, since I've lived here in 06, we still can't figure out the schedule for the roll-off sign now, because we don't know. Sometimes they tear the signs down, we don't know. So we can go there different parts of the week, and the dump is open at different times. Yes, ma'am.
Really?
Yes, ma'am. You go look at the signs, and the signs are posted different than any other sign in this county.
Well, I'll ask Ms. Pemberton answer your questions, but I know that when I've asked this before, I think it was because of the usage.
Right.
You know, some of them that are not some of them that don't have as much usage,
right,
when they cut their hours, like, for instance, all of us have some that's not used that much, and if you kept them open from 9 to 6 or 7 days a week, then
right,
it would not be...
It wouldn't be feasible in that
right.
Market, that's understandable, but the voluminous activity that has happened in the past couple of years, we've got more people living on the beach down there. Mm-hmm. So we have more traffic. We have more. This dump, what it needs to be, this dump needs to be open at 9 a.m. We're getting accumulation of trash out there in front of the gate almost every morning. So the guy that goes down there and opens up the gate, county worker, he's got to sit there for 20, 30 minutes and pick up trash in front of the gate. Because the people that come down there think that it's 9 a.m. And let's say a second homeowner has come from Georgia, and they don't know the schedule. But you would figure because of the uniform, north end's 9 o'clock, south end's 9 o'clock, and east and west. And we did discuss about budgetary issues. It's understandable that we can't afford to do so, but the volume has increased there. So we need to get that standardized, like a stop sign. It's the same thing as in Jacksonville as in Miami. You know what a stop sign is. We don't have a uniform time schedule for Bruce Springs. It's not uniform with the rest of the county.
Well,
we go look at the sign. Next time y'all are down in there, drive by there and look at the sign. It's just not uniform in conjunction with the other.
I don't want to cut off Commissioner Brecker, but I want to speak to the part-time beach resident.
And that's what I was getting to
right.
Too. Go ahead.
Right.
All right. My extended family and I have questions to figure out. And you know, you're down there and the garbage is in the house, and you go out and says, "Can his garbage off?" And one of us get up, the other three families garbage, but you gotta wait 2 o'clock. You know, you want to go around the town and the garbage in the back of your truck. It's I want to say that I agree that it ought to open early. I don't know if we need to have that site open 7 days a week. You know, make it cost the same as far as manpower, but that this dump's going to be closed on.
Well, according to that would be like a seasonal effort.
Yeah.
Meaning that during scout season, obviously you want to be 7 days a week.
Correct.
But during your slow periods.
I like to see it open earlier. You know,
what my constituents in District 3 are looking at is that they want to have a uniform schedule that the south, east, west, north, everybody is the same, open from 9 to 5 or whatever is decided to have in. Because again, you got to wait till 2 o'clock to go dump your trash. You've got to break your day at 2 o'clock no matter what you're doing.
That's right.
Well, you don't have to go at 2, you can go at 5 or 6 or whatever. But here's where I'm at. It would be great if every dump could be open from 9 to 6, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We sat through a budget session last year. We're going to be talking about the budget again next Thursday. We're going to face the same critical issues that we faced last year. I'm all for services if we can afford them. But a wish list and a want list and a need list, we've got to make sure that we don't add anything else that we cannot afford. And I'm not, I mean, I have a house down there too. We use that one, and we use the one out at Johnson Strickland because we have property out that way too. So we put these times in our phones so that we know, okay, this, because we couldn't remember using two roll-offs. My goodness, you can't, so, but anyway, if we can afford it, I'd say go for it. If we can't afford it, then I say absolutely not.
Most of the people in Sean's district that live in Leisure Retreat use a Carlton Cemetery.
Right.
Dump site. They come through the Box Hill Road, come into town, drop their trash off at Carlton.
Most of the people live down on the beach. A lot of times I'm coming down, I bring my garbage from the beach, and we run up here some butter.
Because you know you can.
Let me make a suggestion that we let our solid waste director study this situation and come back and see if he can, with the same funding, you know, change hours here and there, make it consistent.
It's just an ongoing complaint down
here. Yeah, yeah. And I agree with you. I've been down there when you can't get it. It's piled up at the gate.
Right.
And then it's complaining. Commissioner, can you see what I mess with every day? I get here and there's a truckload of garbage all over the fence. I have to deal with that.
So are you saying that in order to make the number of hours equal, we would reduce the hours at one roll-off site to make up for it at another roll-off site?
Well, not necessarily. I don't know if that's a recommendation. You can have money in the budget that you can open an extra 2 hours a day.
Well, the department head not evaluate. Right. Let the department of head
evaluate the situation.
Bring us a proposal and we'll look at it.
Without increasing the budget.
Right.
Well, and I would just respectfully remind the board that department has been, you know, we've had to come to the board and ask for additional funding at least for the last 2 years. So it would be hard for me to imagine that anything's changed, but we can certainly look at it.
Well, we're here, I know, to serve the citizens.
Yes.
And all five of us, I think we try to do everything we can to meet the needs and the wishes and everything, but I have to be real, and I said that from last budget session on, we've got to be real about what we can afford before we add any other expenses, because I won't vote for anything that we're going to add expenses to that we cannot afford.
Well, and I would say if you look at the sell-up season, we certainly increased the hours at that particular roll-off site during that time to try to accommodate the public as best we can. During sell-up season, you know, that roll-off site is open from 10 to 7. But then in the winter, it's 2 to 6 during the week. On the weekends, it's 10 to 6.
But you can get there at 10 a.m. and there's already trash off.
I understand.
Well, I mean, that may be the way it has to be. I mean, if we can afford it, that's great. But if we can't, then that's reality. That's just my opinion.
Let's at least get an evaluation to look and see what direction we need to go.
Exactly.
If we can.
That's good.
If we can.
That's right.
I sure don't want to cut the hours on my Carlton
Cemetery.
No. I don't know.
I'll mess around.
That deal. No. I remember when they used to stack the trash up at the gate, but it wasn't there.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving along. Item number 7 is a board to discuss productivity reporting. Commissioner Murphy?
Yes, ma'am. Basically, what I would like to do is introduce a business technique that's utilized around the world, and it's a simple process, creating a productivity sheet. It's a product report. Okay. Your department heads provide a productivity sheet so that way we can audit our audit. An audit is only a surface audit. How do we know to compare and to measure if we're in the profit margin of loss and gain? To introduce a productivity sheet. To prove to the county what we're supposed to do. This question has been brought up to me countless times. What is the county doing? Well, we have an audit, but again, this only reflects the surface of what's going on. If we have a productivity sheet, it's a progress report. Yes. Okay. Businesses around the world utilize a productivity sheet. And it aids in a tool in an event where you know where you're going or you're not going. Okay. We need to look into these metrics. This has been brought up to me by countless constituents. We need to have a productivity sheet as a form of audit in which we can reflect on our annual audit. So it's basically auditing our audit. How do we know what our employees are doing? What do we know? Other than by the word or the reflection of a purchase order or a work order. But we don't have a paper trail. We don't have a trail on what's going on. So I think we need to be looking into what's called a productivity sheet. Show us productivity. Show us something. Give us something tangible we have in our hand to reflect and audit our audit. I don't know if anybody's ever done this here before in this county where you have a productivity sheet of department heads. I don't know if that's been institutionalized here before. I would imagine it would have at one time.
Being in before Malcolm, if we ever had.
Okay.
Could I?
Sure.
I think that you, that what you're saying is great. I had the opportunity, as a lot of you know, serving for about 10 years on the board of directors at Seminole Electric, which has a budget of more than $2 billion. And they have a staff in their capital headquarters of maybe 175 highly educated people, engineers, doctors, attorneys, the gala. And by board policy, they were required to do just what you're talking about.
Right.
Each month, they made reports. Well, that was their job, to create reports for the board so the board can look at what we're doing and then make recommendations about what direction where we need to spend money. How are that staff of 175? We're hindered here by we have a small staff. And in my experience here, it has always worked pretty well that if I needed specific information about, I won't say roads, draw up sites or what else we're doing, I can go to the administrator or to the assistant administrator and say, give me what's happening down here. What are the motor graders doing? How many miles a week are they running and so forth? And we have a good long discussion. It's more of an informal thing, but it's worked well for me. I just don't know that our staff is robust enough that we could say every department needs to spend how often do you think we need this, Sean? Okay.
Well, what I recommend is every 3 months. I think by doing it monthly would cost too much. It would be too much strain on a person of any magnitude to do something of that nature for a month. If they broke it down 4 times a year, like if you're doing a quarterly.
Well, we've got 5 departments. You got library, you got road departments, you got solid waste,
Sheriff's. Animal control.
Animal control.
Admin. Engineering.
Engineering.
Building and planning.
Right.
Mosquito control.
Mm-hmm.
Recycling.
What I would agree with was maybe not necessarily quarterly, maybe every 4 months or every 6 months, have animal control get on the agenda and they tell us, this is what we're working on, here's what our plans are, and spend 10 minutes.
Right.
And then the next month, you can let the road department do it. Something along that nature,
well, that would
less
be
formal.
Right, well that would be considered, they did it officially in front of the board, that would be considered a productivity sheet because it is the
board.
Right. So that measure I can understand is to make it cost effective. We can't hire an outside consultant to go through and do all that.
No, we can't do that.
That's not what I'm trying to do.
And if it gives the board an opportunity to really understand what we're supposed to do.
There we go. Yep. That's exactly what I'm getting
at. Well, I'm reacting to what's going on here.
If I could make a suggestion.
All right, suggestion.
What?
I'm going to cooperate with you for a change.
And obviously, I've worked for several different county administrators. Some of them felt very strongly that the management of day-to-day operations is something that fell under their purview. And that, but however, I know when I worked with Jack, we would present to the board every year a department presentation and bring the board up to speed every year. This is what our day-to-day, this is what we manage, this is what our goals are, this is what our budget is, these are who our employees are. I've worked here where we've had monthly reporting. Whether you report the same information every month or you track it for 4 months and report it then, I believe it takes the same amount of effort. If we are counting the number of roads that we pave, the number of telephone calls that we answer, the number of citizen encounters, I just believe that's laborious to our staff.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't disagree that my annual report to the board, if the board would like to see our departments come forward and make a presentation, I would not disagree with that.
I think it would be a wise move for you.
I think that'd be a great idea. And, a couple times a year. I don't need to get into the minutiae about how many times you've answered the phone in the last 5 minutes. That's level of detail that you need to do. Not necessarily us, but just
quarterly. Exactly. Are you looking for exactly? What's the concern of those people? Do they think people are not working or?
There's a mistrust of government.
Say again?
There is a mistrust in government. And in order to bond or bridge that trust, if it's been broken to that extent, you have to have some sort of reflectivity, some sort of transparency issue, or an attempt of it. A productivity sheet cuts out the guesses. Okay, if the person comes in, like you say, Mountain Page, you come in, and it's traditionally how it's been done, you make a request and you give the information. Okay. What happens if the person's not a county commissioner? How are they going to obtain or ascertain that information and have to go through a FOIA request?
They can call my office.
Right, that's traditionally how it's done. But that's just your word. I'm not trying to disrespect and saying that your word is a bond, but that is just your word, and that can be taken out of context. But if you have something you can print out, show somebody, look, this is what the county's been doing for the past 3 months, or 6 months, or years. The issue at hand is that people don't trust us. I'll tell you that right now. People don't trust us. If we had a productivity sheet, we have something to show them. We have proof, we have evidence of it. Steer them in the direction that they need these things. It works. A productivity sheet works. You can ask any Fortune 500 company. You've seen it before, I'm pretty sure. If anybody here has been in private business, you use some form of this has been issued. I just think it would be a wise thing to do.
One thing that I have discussed several times, Commissioner Murphy, since I've been here, and I've requested it several times, is that we have a project list of every project. It's online and it's posted maybe out in the lobby of every project when it's going to be started, when's the completion time approximate, and intervals in between, some update, maybe if we had it online, and people could go and look at that and say, oh, you're doing this and this and this and this, and it lets people know what we're doing, because people do say, what do y'all do? You go to 3 meetings a month, what do y'all do? And so then, you start explaining, it's not just 3 meetings a month. Is that something more that would satisfy your...
What my constituents are looking at is productivity of county employees. They want to know what the county's doing.
With any organization, you've got, I think, the majority of people that are really hardworking.
Oh, yeah,
and they give you 8 hours for 8 hours pay. and you've got those that are, you know, going, you've got some that give you, nobody probably gives 100, but say you've got those few that will give you 90,
right.
Then you're probably, the majority of the people are going to be somewhere around probably 70, then you're going to have those that are much lower than that, sure, in any organization. I like Commissioner Page, most of the things that I've requested, they've been done most of the time in a timely fashion. I have had some complaints about, well, I saw this many people and they were at a certain place and they shouldn't have been there. I mean, you're always going to have
that. We just had that last Monday night. A citizen complained about the manpower we used for a bridge dedication. And I was out there. I didn't think it was excessive. If you go have a bridge dedication in the middle of the side of a road,
yeah,
you got to have a track control.
Absolutely.
You know, I'd ask you, you're not going to satisfy everybody.
Well, and I would say that, I mean, we have, I think, different lists that may meet the criteria that Commissioner Murphy is discussing. We have a master project list. We have our work order system. We have, you know, countless emails that we keep up with, making requests of staff. Each department has a website where they list what their, you know, duties and responsibilities are, and we're still working on a flooded road list. So I believe that we are accountable as far as the work that we do.
You know, that work order system we got, I'll bet you could run a program that just shows all the work orders that our road department has done, and our special projects person without identifying which district it was in. And man, that would be a...
It would be voluminous.
Yeah, that would be voluminous right there. Right. So here's what we've been doing. We just got the dates on it. Mm-hmm. That might be easier to do. Just to talk. Mm-hmm. Anyway, bring us up. Like, let us see the department head about once or twice a year.
Would you be satisfied with it, like we've done in the past, a workshop where we provide an update to the board for every department?
Great idea. We did that. We had a workshop. Each person would have 10 minutes. That's a fair workshop.
Absolutely. As long as we have something
that our folks know,
thank
you.
You
are all working.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And of course, let me add that each commissioner certainly is welcome to ask any questions anytime, and I can produce reports or whatever you need. I would be happy to help you.
I thank you.
Okay. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I didn't even let you read the next agenda item.
Item number 8, the board to discuss the purchasing levels of authority policy.
So, the packet that I have given you provides certain information. Back in 2013, Jack Brown brought to the board a request to make some changes to the purchasing thresholds. I have researched the best I can and attempted to reproduce what he brought to the board. So I brought, there's the agenda cover sheet, the PowerPoint slide that he used when I think it was discussed in a workshop, and then the minutes from March 4th, 2013, where the board approved the requested changes to the purchasing policy. Unfortunately, it would appear that none of these changes were ever captured in our policy. So, and an attempt to clarify exactly what our policy is. I have captured the changes in a draft policy, and also provided you with the current or the old policy.
Now, the new policy has these figures that Jack
presented to us on the on the slide there?
Yes. Which is?
Which is?
For purchases of single items less than $2,500, best purchasing practices should be used. That is straight out of the Florida Administrative Code.
Okay.
Purchase orders with a per unit cost between $2,501 and $35,000 will be authorized by the department head and the county administrator. 3 written quotes are required, or we must document no quotes.
That's in the FSC Rule 68-1.
Yes.
Now, do we go by that, or do we go by the Taylor County current policy?
Well, we've been... yes, sir. I would say so. We've largely been sticking to the old policy because that's what we're... that's what we have in writing, although I do think there have been some purchases that have utilized what was approved back in 2013.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it going to be your recommendation that we approve this new policy that you've created with these numbers in it? Or will it change these amounts?
I would like to capture what the board approved back in 2013.
Which is this?
Yes, sir.
That's the second column, right?
That is, yes.
$2,501 or $35,000?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's this policy which will be dated, it's dated here 4/5/10.
I'll fix that. I'm sorry, that's the ground. That would be whatever the date of the board meeting.
Are you comfortable with that?
You don't think it's wrong for you may want to move it up a little bit.
I'm comfortable with what's captured in policy. If we've been using a threshold of 35,000 and that is what state statute and the administrative code, if that's what the state government uses,
right.
And we obtain 3 written quotes or we actually purchase off, we piggyback or we purchase off the state, like the Sheriff's Association or DMS or something like that, I think that that's basically following state statute. But
I don't have any problem with it.
So with this, just to clarify, a department head could go out and spend up to $35,000, right? With they have to get quotes and they have to be approved by.
Yes. Any purchases over $15,000 have to be approved by the county administrator. But yes, it would require
over 15. And what's that side? What was that? I don't see that.
This is a policy.
This is single item purchases. So yes. So for instance, if it was a vehicle purchase, because these are single line item purchases, so it would have to be a large purchase, something like a vehicle. It would be the main item that we would purchase. We would be able to either purchase off state contract or to obtain 3 quotes. And then the purchasing agent, that's it, the department head approves it and the county administrator approves it. Now again, we follow our CIP, our approved CIP as well.
So a department can spend $1,500.
$2,500.
With a per unit cost between $500 and $1,500 issued on authorization of the department.
That's the old policy.
The notes in here is not the same as what we talked about this afternoon. If you're going to get a quote from somebody, you get 3 quotes.
I see.
The quote specification should be in writing, so that everybody who quotes on something
has the same
information. Because you can pick up the phone and call one place to get a quote, and it'd be one thing, and you talk to the next one, and the specs is not the same as you just told this one, and so you get a little bit. It needs to be in writing. Whatever quote specification you use needs to be furnished to whoever's going to do the quote.
Yeah, and I'd like to suggest that we have time to
look at this.
Absolutely.
And study it and then come back. But I agree with Amy on
the written specification.
Yes, but
I just feel like we need to move, we need to capture this in policy. So there's no question. I think we spend too much time trying to determine what our policy is.
Right, and I agree. I think it needs to be cleaned up and done, but, you know, again.
Y'all talking about something in writing, each quote, less $25,000.
Well, I'm talking about the fix for whatever you get the quote.
Right.
Say, you get the quote, three ready quotes on one item.
Yeah.
If you don't have written specifications for what you're asking for, you may ask this of one person and this of somebody else. And, you know, you and I have talked about this. $35,000 is a lot of money to spend taxpayers' money without the board's approval in my book.
Right.
When you got people who will go buy a car on the state contract, this is what we talk about. And they get a low price. And then they go out there and they add all kinds of stuff to that vehicle, which is a part of that same vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that to circumvent a lot of times the purchase policy.
Split it up,
in
other words.
They split it up.
That's right. All right, now, is there a minimum that a department head can go buy without having to get three quotes?
$2,500. And the way it is, the language that's used in Florida Administrative Code is the language came straight out of the code, best purchasing practices.
All right, well, I'm confused now. You wanted all these quotes to be in writing with the specs.
From $2,501. That's
$2,501 on up.
Whatever you get quotes on, and it's according to this policy, the three quotes would comply, would be, if it's $2,500 or more.
Okay, all right.
So my thing is that when you're going to get quotes on something, you need to have written specifications for what you're getting on. Especially if you go up to $35,000.
Do you think the board would be wise to reduce the $35,000 to a lower number?
I don't agree with $35,000.
Would you agree with
$25,000? That's the bottom.
Well, then we'll spend all of our time here open the bids for $2,600 items.
But that's the best way to let the citizens know that you're concerned about what's being purchased.
What if this was a vehicle that's on the state bid list and all of that? We don't normally do. We should go buy.
Well, if on state contract.
But a department has to be budgeted for that. And in order to be budgeted for funding like that, their capital, if you recall, as part of this last year's, and I think 2 years in a row since I've been back, we asked the board to approve our capital expenditures. So the board's approved our capital expenditures one time, the money's moved into the budget, and now we're just trying to be able to spend it without starting all over again and going through a bid process if this policy's already in place.
I could say it's just a more efficient way to purchase.
I'll do whatever the, I'm not here to argue the point. I'm just trying to capture in policy what has been a policy since 2014.
I think we need to somehow make sure that we are getting the best value for whatever. I mean, and I know some people like me, I wouldn't even go buy a $125 weed eater without comparing prices at the same weed eater with three different places just because I'm spending my money.
Right.
And so I want to make sure that I'm getting the best price, you know. If I can get gas for $2.10 versus $2.39, I mean, you know, it's just that shopping and making sure that we're...
Well, that's the definition of best purchasing policies.
Right.
And our staff, as far as I know, you know, I can't be everywhere at one time, but my staff reassures me that they always try to get the best value, and we shop locally as much as we can. And a lot of the purchases we make are repetitive purchases, so we know, you know, that this store or this supplier has it at this price, and this supplier over here is a little bit higher. So I think it just becomes a matter of practice for us.
That's only less than $2,500 out of me.
Yes, sir.
No problem with that, practice.
But I'm just asking the board to review this policy, and when we're ready to put it on the agenda, I would like to move forward so we have some clear definition of what our policy is and how to follow it.
Well, I think each commissioner can look at this and jot down your own thoughts,
yeah,
and then come back together again maybe at the next workshop and put all our ideas on the table, mm-hmm, and then come to a consensus of what we want to do and then put it on the next board meeting where we can vote on it. Is that fast enough?
Oh, absolutely. I'm just, mm-hmm, attempting to make some forward progress.
Yeah.
But okay. I don't like ambiguity in our policy.
Right.
Exactly. And I appreciate you looking into this. That's good. That's the last thing on our agenda tonight, but I wanted to ask one question if the board wishes to speak about it, and that was to discuss our workshop dates. Madam Chair, you want to speak to that?
We talked about earlier is when we have a regular meeting on the first Monday of the month, and then 2 or 3 nights later, we've got a workshop. So you've been here 3 hours tonight. And it takes time to get together what you've done in a regular meeting, and then you have another meeting right after that for the workshop. I had to talk to the one about it if it's convenient for them to do that, but it looks like that maybe you can find a better day when we don't have another regular meeting in the same week.
Right. I was just thinking about that this morning.
Yeah, so, you know, it's up to the board, and I talked to Jimmy Siegel about it and Mr. Page earlier, is a way to change it so we have 2 long meetings in 1 week.
So, well, I never understood why we had a meeting on a Monday, and a meeting on a Tuesday, and a meeting on a Thursday. Why in the world wouldn't all our meetings be on a Tuesday, or a Monday, or a Thursday?
At 6 o'clock.
Well, you got one in the morning, so.
They used to be, the first meeting in the month was on a Tuesday. They were Tuesday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
I don't remember when they got changed to Monday, the first Monday.
It was like that when I came along with
the
end.
Was, yeah, what we used to do.
What day away from me?
I just think it's a spread for everybody to have 2 long meetings in 1 week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like January the 7th, which was our last regular meeting. And then here we are meeting on what is it?
10th. 3 days later.
Mm-hmm. 3 days later. If you had this meeting tonight, next week, then you'd have 1 meeting away for 3 weeks. Then the fourth week, you would have a meeting. You're ready for the next one. Well, that's the only way I see you can improve. You need to have it the second week of the month or the fourth week. Right?
So I wonder what's more convenient for you, because if they had it on the last Tuesday of the month, that would give you, if there's something that's on the workshop that needs to be approved,
mm-hmm,
and you could get it on the agenda to get it
out of the first meeting in the next one.
I just want to caution that we did make some changes from the original schedule that came out because of certain things, like we've got the SAC legislative day, and then we've got, you know, Valentine's Day, and we didn't want to have a meeting on Valentine's night, and July the 4th. So I think we have to take into consideration some key things. But other than that, I mean, I like consistency, but, you know.
Didn't we change the workshops at one time because of a conflict with Big Bend Water Authority meeting?
We did, and also you have to check with Conrad because he goes to Horseshoe some night, so you know you have to check with his schedule too. And I forget, maybe it's Thursdays that he goes to Horseshoe. I'm not sure.
I can't remember.
Also, I think it's on the
third Monday, I think, from the landfill beach. We don't meet every month. Meet about every other month.
I go to the Swanee River, North End Broad, and the planning council holds Thursday every month.
On Thursday?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and if Conrad's got stuff on Thursdays and you've got stuff on Monday, then maybe Tuesday would be a good day, but we have to verify that.
All right, let's verify that, and let's
keep
all our meetings on Mondays, too.
It really doesn't make sense to have three, you know, meetings like we have this. We had one meeting, and now we have a workshop in the same week. And our staff got to be up early in the morning, they got to be here early in the morning. So I think what we need to do is probably double check all our calendars.
Yeah.
Turn in our calendars to the county administrator so that way they can see what type of adjustment needs to be made. Because it's going to be difficult to try to line up 5, 6, 7, 8, trying to line up all these schedules.
Yes.
It's going to be a difficult process.
Very difficult.
Yeah, very difficult process because what suits me may not suit you and vice versa. So, but I think it does need to be changed in the future. That's a little too much. It's not strenuating for me, it's strenuating for our staff. That's the way I look at it. I mean, here it is almost, it's 5 after 9. You have to be here what time in the morning?
8 a.m.
That's my concern.
I have my children to school too.
So, can I ask a question? Would you be interested in a daytime workshop or do you want evening meetings?
Oh, well, more morning time stuff than we have to do.
It doesn't matter to me.
Well, what if you had started after March?
Huh?
What if you started after March? Well, I have to be at the school at 2.
I'm available. I don't like to be before 9 o'clock.
Okay, well then, Tuesday evenings, can you think of any of your committees or boards that meet on Tuesday night?
I don't have any to do.
Don't think so.
Typically the last week of the month is a little quieter for us. And I mean that would work for us.
The fourth
Tuesday of the month.
That's why we used to do it. It worked pretty good.
It would space them out. And I think I'd rather have one meeting a month or a week than to try to have
two in 1 week.
Right. Night meetings especially.
Okay. Well, send us something, email us something. Would that conclude everything for this evening? Anybody else have anything
quickly? Yes. I might call me about 11 o'clock to bring shovel in the bay and whatever at Cross Capitol Hall I'm getting delivery of this Master Gardner bill that they bought. So supposedly that got delivered today.
That's paid for.
Yes. Right. And our people went out there and got somebody driving 2 stumps down. And I don't think that's going to charge us anything.
Good. That's the way it is.
They were wrecking up some other folks there. And so that's one project they got behind. Also, while I was out there, Jim, that road that goes behind Park Capitol, winds down that road.
Right.
All this rain and all this full of potholes. We ought to put a couple of those buildings in there.
Before we have another festival or something. Yeah, you're bringing it in. We're going to have a little bit of festival before the festival this year, but it's a road building. They painted it out there. It does. But if you get some building in a little narrow cuts across the lawn right by the stadium, it's kind of bumpy. Let me tell you about something I've got down on our board retreat is one of the items on there is to look at the road paving, the Forest Capitol Hall, and also lighting. So let's discuss that in detail next Thursday.
There's something else that needs to be forthcoming on too that's been brought to my attention. We need to fix up some kind of temporary barrier for use on that back door where you can you won't have access to the office area, but you'll have access to the bathroom. On festival day, we need to be able to come, people need to be able to come in on that west door and go in the hall and use the handicap bathroom. So I've had a lot of people complain about.
There's a door over there on that side.
But you'd have to, you just put a temporary barricade in the hall.
Yeah.
Where they couldn't go no farther than the bathroom.
Okay.
You know, and then you'd have to put a little L shape, and I talked to, you know, several people about it, wanted me to try to see if we could do that for event where on the outside where people could use our nice bathrooms that we have there now. You know, you got a lot of people that handicapped people that need that bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, it's a rough and port-a-john for a handicapped person. They have handicapped port-a-john.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that brought my attention during Pine Creek Festival Parade, everybody sitting up that morning all the way down Jefferson Street, there needs to be some port-a-john spotted along Jefferson Street for that morning.
Mm-hmm. Parade, no?
Because people, I mean, they're there for 2 or 3 hours waiting, you know, to start the parade. And it'd be real simple to put someone when they block the city road off if they had them right there along every other road down Jefferson Street.
But they need to talk to the city about that.
Yeah.
We've got a city councilman here. No contact for you.
It would be. But if any, a bunch of people mentioned that morning when everybody was setting up, there were people leaving and they were looking at watching and run down there to that laundromat and run back up the road. You know, everybody wants to know where the port-a-john was. I said there's not one. If it hadn't been for Mikey Hart's laundromat down there, people would be in trouble.
You got that work, Cashin? Thank you. Anything else? If not, let's go home.
Let's go home. All right. Yes,
So,
do
you want to talk to me about this?
Yes, ma'am.
We have one here.
Yeah, we're
doing it. Yeah, we're doing it. Yes, ma'am.